Attention FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
I want to show you something. This is my new mop. George, my friend, he gave me this mop. It's a pretty good mop. It's not as good as my first mop. I miss my first mop. But this is still a good mop. Sometimes you just have to take what life gives you. Because life is like a mop. And sometimes life gets full of dirt and crud and bugs and hairballs and stuff. You gotta clean it out. You gotta put it in here and rinse it off and start all over again. And sometimes life sticks to the floor so bad. You know, a mop is not good enough. It's not good enough. You gotta get down there like with a toothbrush, you know? And you gotta really scrub. You gotta get it off. You gotta really try to get it off. But if that doesn't work, you can't give up. You gotta stand right up. You gotta run to a window and say, "Hey! These floors are dirty as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore."
From the 905 Geek Studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah. Not bad. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at something that only I know about. It'll all be explained here in just a second.
Why, hello! Stanley, do you want to host a television show? Okay.
It's 3 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of August in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and not... You know what I was just distracted by just now? Sarah, in manner of Anchorman dog Baxter, was just holding up an entire wheel of cheese. That's fantastic. Can I just tell you this? You know what I did last night? I did, in fact, eat an entire wheel of cheese. Last night, I did that.
Like this kind?
Me, Rick Emerson, yes, of Laughing Cow Cheese. I had an entire wheel of Laughing Cow Cheese. And it's really not funny unless you say wheel, like, and you pronounce the H. If you just say wheel of cheese, I mean, it's sort of moderately amusing. But when you announce that you have eaten a wheel of cheese, that, my friend, is where the comedy begins. I was trying to do the whole introduction here. Sarah held up this whole wheel of Laughing Cow Cheese to the light as though she were attempting to peer through it, like when you try to read your neighbor's mail. Were you looking for a secret message on the cheese?
No, I was looking at the calorie content.
It's 30 calories per wedge.
A wedge.
Is it 35?
Mm-hmm.
What flavor is that? Is that the Swiss herb?
No, this is the light original Swiss.
Oh, see, I don't get that. I get the garlic and herb. All right. That's probably more. Anyway, last night I sat on the couch watching Godfather 2. Just ate an entire wheel of cheese. And that was my dinner. My wife is out of town and I'm becoming a Neanderthal. That's it. Just regressing to my primordial state. By the end of the weekend, I won't even exist. I'll just be a one-celled organism slipping between the couch cushions. Oh, I did have some Triscuits, too. Hello to you. What was I saying? Well, whatever. We're here in Portland. It's 503-733-2970 here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And I'm really not even sure that that's a balanced... Well, it's certainly not a balanced diet. I don't know whether it's a healthy diet or not. I mean, is a dinner consisting of half a box of Triscuits and a wheel of cheese? I mean, I'm not saying you represent...
Hey, that's what my lunch is consisting of.
It's not like all the food groups are present. I'm not going to claim that I'm eating the entire food pyramid there. I'm just not sure whether it's bad for me as such. I'm going to lean towards not, if only because no one has corrected me on it. All right, it is Friday. It's 503-733-2970. 503 533-2970, 503-733-2970. You want to join us today, 503-733-2970 with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. 503-733-2970. Scotty J is standing by, able, willing, and ready to pass along your observations about the groundbreaking, the interesting, the tedious, the mundane, the somewhere in between, the pedantic or the dazzling. 503-733-2970. You want to email? You can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. The rest of the crew here, Tim at 970.am, Sarah at 970.am, or Scotty J at 970.am. That's how you do that. AM is the suffix there, which I do believe means that we are in... Did we decide it was Albania? No, it's Armenia. That's where our website is apparently housed. Armenia. It's really amazing that the web server hasn't been chopped up and rampaged by angry villagers as a tool of the devil by now, but what are you going to do?
Or eaten by a hungry yak.
With this web server, I can feed an entire family for 1 month. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for joining us today. It is Friday, and welcome to Day 12. Let me ask you this before we do anything else. Because I, geek that I am, I don't really know how to do this. So, Sarah, maybe you can help me out. If I have a picture on my telephone, like a mobile, somebody sent me a multimedia message. Somebody sent me a picture, basically. They text messaged me a picture.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how to get that posted on a website.
Just email it to yourself.
So can I do that?
So where it says send, instead of typing in numbers, you switch it to the letters
option. I go to text
option,
and I type in the like Rick@Rick.
And just send it to rick@rickemerson.com, okay. And you can take it from there.
All right. Because somebody, and I shouldn't say who it is, one of our legions of glorious bastards, somebody out there sent us a fantastic radio photo this morning. I think I'm going to make you all wait just a few minutes before I tell you what it is.
A radio photo.
And I know that sounds dorky, but you will appreciate this. It will make you happy.
Is it somebody in an embarrassing spot for a remote?
Well, no, it's embarrassing, but not for us. It will make you smile. So I'm just going to tease everybody with that. It will have special resonance to the people in this room and to, to X number of the people who are out there listening to us right now. It'll have a little special. It'll bring a little golden smile to your face. So we'll get to that. So that's, I know that I really am very, very cruelly and callously teasing something right now. But and this is not going to be a thing that I tease that I never get to. I'll reveal it here in just a couple minutes. But somebody sent me a fantastic photo this morning. It was just, I was already having a good day. I'm not going to lie. I was having a great day already. And it just took a great day and it made it a stupendous day. All right, here's what's coming up today. We'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. He's there in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where they're just continuing to deconstruct this whole... Deconstruct is probably the wrong word to use. They're continuing to analyze this bridge failure. Did you see in the front page of the Oregonian today was a whole lot, are your bridges safe in Portland? It's exactly what we were saying. They were getting all the city fathers together, just standing around pointing at bridges, you know, with captions. It's safe, we promise. We're still trying to track down whether it is or is not an urban legend that the guy who constructed the Fremont Bridge won't drive on it. Maybe we should get somebody from the city about that today. We can get somebody from the city and drill them until they give us the truth on that.
Scotty knows people.
All right. Scotty, use your various connections to make that. Don't ask Dan Saltzman about it. Or do. I don't care.
How about Vera Katz? What can she possibly be doing at this point?
Let's see, Lisa Goddard will be joining us today from the Hill. We'll have CNN radio correspondent Steve Kastenbaum joining us. I guess we're recalling something else made by the Chinese today. I mean, really, I've lost track. We need some sort of separate...
They're Chinese fairy dolls.
Okay. I just had like 9 jokes go through my head at once and I was sort of paralyzed by it.
That's the tease before the tease.
All right. So we'll talk to Steve Kastenbaum. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com will be joining us in the studio later on. We will have the top 5 60s slow dance songs. Top 5 60s slow dance songs. We did not get to that yesterday. Geek Watch coming up today. Actually, sort of a Geek Watch and a half. We will do that. What else do I have here? Just all of this stuff, big pile of, and I have a useless tchotchke that was sent to me in the mail today. We'll talk about that here. Just a few as well. It's 503-733-2970. It is Friday, so we have Steve Kastenbaum, Lisa Goddard, Ed McCarthy, Scott Daly, Top 5, Geek Watch. And we may, if we have time, we probably won't. If we have time, we may reprise yesterday's vote on the second worst story of all time, because it was really almost too close to call, and then we had two votes that were sort of, I don't know, they were sort of questionable, because one guy said, well, I vote for story number one, but then he actually identified which story he wanted to vote for, and it was a story from 2 weeks ago. So I don't, I'm not even clear about whether there is a whole sort of Dade County thing going on with the voting. So we may, in fact, revisit our hunt for the second worst story ever. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a second. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I, too, am having a fabulous morning.
Are you?
Because I discovered...
Let rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain. Chocolate rain.
I don't understand.
A baby born will die before the sin. Chocolate rain. The school books say it can't be here again. Chocolate rain.
I.
The prisons make you wonder where it went. Chocolate rain.
I don't understand. Leave to explain.
Attend and say the world is dry. Chocolate rain.
I don't know.
What is this?
Zoom the
Look, this guy's like, voice kind of freaks me out.
It's a kid.
Still be falling yesterday, chocolate rain. Only in the past is what they say, chocolate rain.
It just goes on forever.
Raise your neighborhood insurance rate, chocolate rain.
Okay, please turn that off. Freaking me out.
I know, I've been watching it all morning.
That kid looks like a 15-year-old Andre Brower.
And it's bizarre, and it's coming out of his head, and he's like a 12-year-old boy.
Seriously, he's a very young teenager. That voice should not come out of that guy.
It goes on for over 5 minutes, and it just every sentence starts with chocolate rain.
Was that given to you by Corden, Fat Boy?
No.
Be honest. Okay.
No, I found it on the internet.
They're the usual culprits.
Chocolate rain. It's very quickly crashing through your veins. Chocolate rain.
I think we have our end of show cut. That's fantastic.
I don't even know what it is. No, I just found that. And then I'm going to see one of my favorite bands tonight, which I'm so, so excited about.
How can you top Bone Thugs and Harmony?
Oh, I know. But what? Paige France.
And so Paige France, now see, here's what it is. I was thinking about this the other day. I was confusing Paige France with Sage Francis.
Yeah.
See, do you see how I might make that mistake, though?
I totally can. Yeah, a lot
France,
of people do.
Sage Francis. Sage Francis is a rapper, is he not?
Yes, Sage Francis is. Sometimes I'll be like, Paige Francis? Sage France?
Yeah, so I don't know. And Paige France is like an acoustic rock kind of a thing?
Yeah.
All right, excellent.
So they're...
Are you trying to find... Are you endeavoring
no, I
to find...
They're my MySpace song right now.
Where is this happening?
At the Doug Fir.
Are tickets still available, Sarah?
I believe they are. I haven't purchased my ticket yet, so I don't want to say that. There's like this really happy folky music, and then it breaks down halfway through.
Why this is happy.
And folky.
I'll be at home eating another wheel of cheese.
You can come with Kiki and I.
Eh, I'm not cool enough to hang out with Kiki and you.
Oh, you totally are.
No, I'm really not. Kiki and her many snap brim hats. I'm not fashionable enough to do that. It is not a thing that works out for me.
Well, isn't Laura out of town?
Yes, she is. Yes, so I
you need to get out of the house, right?
Yeah, because that's exactly what I should do. I should stay at home all the time when my wife is in town, and then as soon as she leaves, I should go to see a band with two other women.
I didn't know you actually sat at home on the weekends. You really do?
What are you, high? Of course I do. How long have you known me?
Harry Potter was the event of the year for
really?
You.
Really? What would I be doing? What would I possibly be doing?
I don't know, like... Going to a movie or something?
Well, I might do that. I might go to a movie alone and then go back home and lock the door again. But that's it. What I really can't do is be... Annie, I'm glad you you're leaving town. Well, what are you going to do? I'm going to go out to a show with Sarah and Kiki. Yeah, that's going to work. All right, Tim Riley is working on the following stories for your edification today.
That terrorist who barbecued himself in that botched Glasgow airport car bombing has died. Sandy Man has been arrested for upskirt videos at a mountain festival. Things at the bridge aren't as bad as originally thought. There are 4 dead, though, and only 8 missing, not 30, as originally thought, which is a miracle in itself. Portland police confiscate 7 pit bulls at a North Portland fight club. Chinese fairy dolls are being recalled because they may choke American kids. And the best story of all, visualize this. Beer and wine sales will contribute to the family fun of this year's Clark County Fair.
Of course. Fantastic. And by family... never mind. I'll save my jokes for later. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, so we've got all of that. Before I do anything else, can we roll a little impromptu Geek Watch here, Sarah? We'll just begin the program here, and then I will get these. I will get these calls. So if you are on hold, hang tight. Let's do this. Let's start the program at a Geek Watch.
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux. Now just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
All right, I know it's a little early in the program to be doing a Geek Watch, but they're starting to pile up around us. We're trying to bail out the ship here. So at the end of yesterday's program, I don't know whether you heard this or not. At the end of yesterday's show, a guy called, and it was sort of the best of calls, the worst of calls, because we only had like 20 seconds left in the program, and the guy called up with a Harry Potter question. And by the way, I will tell you this, that what we're about to say is a little bit of a spoiler. Not too much. It's just sort of a happening, not really a spoiler as such. But we have passed the Harry Potter media blackout stage. Hell, Rowling herself, J.K. Rowling, she knows that her people got that book and then read it in like a day and a half. Because Rowling, the book came out on a Friday, and on Tuesday, she did some interview. The book hadn't even been out a week. She did some interview where she was saying, well, I know everyone expected Harry to die, but at the end, he lived. And like that was the opening line of her interview. So she already knows that most of the people have read the book. A guy calls up yesterday, and he says, Rick, is the media blackout over Harry Potter done? And I said, yeah, pretty much. You know, all the hardcore people have already read it. And it's the journey, not the destination. And he says, well, I have a question. He said, how is it that Neville was able to pull the Sword of Gryffindor out of the sorting hat at the end when he, you know, when Voldemort was facing off against Dumbledore's army outside of Hogwarts? And we only had like 20 seconds left in the show, and I just completely froze. There was all this pressure to get the answer out there, and so we had nothing. And so rather than just punting and saying, well, it isn't magic, we said nothing. So I do now want to give the answer to that. This is courtesy of Chris, who has sent this in. Rick, at the end of yesterday's program, a caller asked how the sword ended up in the sorting hat for Neville. The easy answer is the same way it ended up in the sorting hat for Harry in the Chamber of Secrets. The sorting hat, which belonged to Godric Gryffindor, supplied the person who needed the sword with the sword if their need was true and they were a worthy Gryffindor. Fox brought Harry the empty hat, and the hat supplied the sword. If the hat can magically transport the sword from Dumbledore's office, it could magically take it away from Griphook, Griphook being a goblin. Griphook did have the real sword because goblins can tell the difference between wizard work and goblin work. He'd know it was fake since he identified the fake when Bellatrix put it in the vault in the first place. Harry and Ron's attempted trickery involved not putting a time limit on the return of the sword to Griphook, but he absconded with it. The hat provided Longbottom, a worthy Gryffindor in need, with the sword. And then he finishes the email by saying, I'm glad I am married to a huge Harry Potter fan or I'd never get laid again. There you go. That's from Chris. Thank you, Chris. And finally, before we wrap up the Geek Watch, let me say this. Almost never would I come on the air and announce something like this with happiness is the wrong word, because I'm not... It's sort of a mixed bag about this, what I'm about to read you. It is bittersweet. This is the best of emails and the worst of emails. Now, you know, in fact, I think today is the last day because you heard it at the top of the show. We've been talking about 1-800-905-GEEK. We're one of our many proud sponsors. Advertising in the Rick Emerson Show, one of our studio name sponsors. So 1-800-905-GEEK. Now, I am sad to say, now they're going to be, it's all in the family, so they're going to be staying with CBS. But the advertising, which had been done on AM 970, they are going to be moving to one of our sister stations. They are going to be taking...
Oh.
I know. And normally I would never come on and go, hey, listen to this. We have an advertiser who's leaving us. There's two reasons that I'm announcing this. One is that they are taking the advertising, which was here on AM 970, and they are moving it. See, I don't even know if I should say what station they're moving it to, and I'll tell you why. This is an email from the client himself, a guy named Terry, cool guy, and he actually says right here in the email, says, love the show, love the station, he says, great live reads from Rick Emerson, couldn't be happier with the sound of the live reads. I swear to you now, I would like everybody to listen to what this email says. This is an email from 1-800-905-GEEK. And again, there's no rancor here. It's a happy parting because the money, as I said, is staying in the family. It's staying with CBS. Just going across the hall. Here is an email from the owner of 1-800-905-GEEK. the owner of 1-800-905 what, Sarah?
Geek.
1-800-905-GEEK. He says this, and I'm quoting. It is my opinion, says the owner of 1-800-905-GEEK. He says, it is my opinion that AM970's audience is too geeky for our services. Consequently, I plan on moving my advertising to couple immediately. Bam! So, again...
Yeah, it sounds like a real cool, wonderful man.
I... No,
come on.
No, I mean, it's, you know,
yeah.
whatever.
That's... Yes.
So...
Good luck, my friend.
I mean, you know, it is what it is. So it's all, again, I can't be too annoyed by it because, again, it's staying within the building, just moving across the hall. But the notion that a company called 1-800-905-GEEK, the notion that this audience is, in fact, too geeky, even for a company with geek in its name. There you go. So the straw chewing audience will be using the services of 1-800-905-GEEK.
Well, thank God it'll be in the right space then.
So there you go. All right, it's I think that's it. Oh, and finally this, and then we'll just talk about a couple small things. Get these calls. We'll break. We got Ed McCarthy coming up. Not only will the this is from Mania.com. Not only will the final cut of Blade Runner be released on DVD is December 18th, but they are planning a limited re-release in theaters October 5th. On that date, select theaters in Los Angeles and New York will be re-releasing the definitive version of Ridley Scott's classic science fiction film starring Harrison Ford. So there you go. So if you are in Los Angeles, New York, you'll be able to see Blade Runner on the big screen the way it was meant to be. Blade Runner, the final cut, will be included in three stunning DVD editions, a two-disc special edition, a four-disc collector's edition, and wait for it, a five-disc Ultimate Collector's Edition in collectible Deckard briefcase packaging. Blade Runner. Five discs. Let's see, December 18th. There you go. Five discs. That is all ye know and all ye need know, my friend. All right, let's close out the Geek Watch. Thank you.
By Draptar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
All right, we'll do these calls, then we'll break. We'll come back with Ed McCarthy. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hi, Rick. Hey. I was driving through Oregon the other day, and I passed right by Metolia.
Really? Did you have Scotty Dre's voice go through your head?
Yes, I did, that sounder. But the reception was quite fuzzy. I could barely make you guys out. But then anyway, driving farther into Oregon, I was able to pick up some California radio. And it was funny what was on the news. This lady was scratching off a lottery ticket in the parking lot, and she literally went, "Woohoo! I won!" and held it up in her hand like in a celebratory double fist. "Woohoo! I won it!" And you could guess the rest of the news story, right?
No.
I mean, come on. She had her lottery ticket in her hand.
It blew away.
Woohoo! I won! It was like 25,000. Hands up in the air. Somebody came by on a bike. I'm sorry if I'm too amused by it. But.
No, but please.
No.
So somebody came on a bike and took it?
Boink. I mean, just guy riding on a bike. It was on the news coming out of California late at night.
Wait, no, I'm so confused. So she's in the parking lot. She holds up a ticket that says 25. I won. A guy.
No, I'm sorry. It was a lottery ticket.
Right.
A scratch off. $25,000
sure.
Is what she'd won.
Right.
Has it in her hand. Double fists up in the air, celebratory. Woo! I won. Somebody riding by on a bicycle. Donk, and just kept right on going.
Excellent. Man's humanity to man. Thank you, sir. That's fantastic.
Oh, by the way, Rockefeller's follow-up to, I don't know if someone said this, but Rockefeller's follow-up to Somebody's Watching Me
yes,
was...
Thank you.
Obscene phone call.
Right.
Did you know that?
No, I thought it was... See, I thought he was just saying nothing. I thought that was the joke. We're losing yourself, sir. I thought the joke was the silence. Like, his follow-up to that was... Now, see, but it turns out there really was something there. All right. Kyle, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, Rick?
Hey.
Kyle, your old intern.
Hey, Kyle.
I was hoping that was the first thought in my mind. Hey, Kyle.
How are you, my friend? How are things?
Good. How are you guys?
Excellent.
You still have that pretty girlfriend?
I'm engaged.
She's going to marry you?
I know. I didn't believe it either.
Oh, Kyle. Are you smoking less pot now?
Very less pot, yes.
No, she's the drugged one, I think.
Exactly.
What's up, brother?
Oh, I was just seeing if you guys checked out. I know, Rick, I'm sure you didn't, but the X Games last night, there was a ridiculous crash. This guy dropped from about 50 feet in the air.
I was watching that last night. I was watching it, and my mind was in slow motion. I thought I was going to see somebody die.
Yeah, Sarah told me about that. I came in this morning. She was like, did you see the skateboard crash in the X Games last night? And I didn't, but she said the guy fell straight down like 50 feet.
Yeah, I seriously thought he was dead. I didn't see how he could survive, but it proves your logic, though, that you always said about the shoes flying off. If you watch it, his shoes blow off like they have rockets on him when he's...
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, now, it's probably on YouTube by now.
Oh, yeah,
and
he got up and walked away.
Oh, and see, those guys, their bones are made out of plastic or something, because those guys, they never... those guys never break anything. They're never dead. Like, you would think that the hospitals would just be filled with paralyzed skateboarders. But they just survive. Okay, I totally have to go look it up on YouTube then.
Yeah, it's on there right now. So.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right, my friend, say hi to Megan for us.
I will.
All right, there you go. And one more, then we're going to break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, it's Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I think it makes perfect sense that InnerGeek would go elsewhere. Because, anybody with the skills to properly call themselves a geek wouldn't dare pay someone else to fix their stuff.
Well, I was going to say, they will have strong results from the country audience. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Thank you, sir.
Good luck, bye.
All right. There you go.
All right, Rick, you want to see it?
Seriously? I'm going to cut that sentence out in the email when he says, your audience is too geeky for 1-800-905-GEEK. I'm going to cut it out, and I'm going to laminate it, and I'm going to put it above my desk. Yes?
All right, you want
to
see it?
We have to break. Can we see it on the other side?
Yes.
All right. Break. We come back. Ed McCarthy, Lisa Goddard, Jim Riley, Scott Daly. More of your phone calls. It's on the way. Straight there. Oh, I feel the wacky DJ voice coming on.
Do it. Well, why are you playing this, Rick Emerson? Aren't you doing a wacky DJ bit?
It's all Madonna. I'm not doing a wacky DJ bit. It's all Madonna all day. Completely walked on the post, too.
So this isn't wacky?
It's not wacky. It's Madonna. You shut your mouth. Well, we had this whole plan. We were going to do all Madonna bumper music all day today, and I forget why that was. Oh, it's because we were playing Crazy for You on, like, Tuesday. And I was like, oh, this is great. I love Madonna. I'm going to blame it on all Friday. And then I forgot. I forgot to bring Madonna, but Scotty came running in 5 minutes ago. And he's like, I got all this Madonna. Are we going to do all Madonna music? And so I forgot my Madonna. But Scotty J, fortunately, Scotty has come through for us. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. And I think Ed is actually in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Let's welcome CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How are you today?
Hi. I'm sorry we're getting to you a little late. I apologize for our sloth in getting to you. Our show's running a couple minutes behind today. So is there anything new to report in this crash or this Minnesota bridge? We heard yesterday, and of course these things always, the finger pointing always starts afterward. We heard yesterday that as far back as 1990 now, they were saying that somebody told them this bridge was in a bad way.
They have actually had apparently a couple of warning signs, and this thing just happened in a matter of seconds. I'm looking right now at the bridge collapse where it is, and it's just downriver a little bit from where I am, and it's very sad. It's really ironic today, Rick. It's a morbid curiosity that so many people are coming by here, and the divers are trying to recover the bodies, and it's just really, really tough. Laura Butch was here, the first lady. She just flew over me, as a matter of fact, in a helicopter, and she drove by earlier where I am right now. And it's just very, very sad. The president will be here tomorrow, and this community is just shaken by this. It's just horrible. And so many people that drive over this bridge, that used to drive over the bridge, I should say, now in past tense, they just can't believe it. They say, you know, it just wasn't my time. You know, it's just horrible. But it just shakes them to death because they know that it could have been them.
Well, that really is just the very definition of the luck of the draw there. Here's an architectural, not an architectural, what's the word, an engineering question. And just because I'm curious about this sort of thing, these cars, how do you get these cars out of the river? Do they have to have boats that are equipped with cranes somehow go out onto the river? Or do they, if a car is sunk at the bottom of the river, do they just leave it there?
Yeah, they're going to have to leave it there. If they're not finding bodies right now, Rick, what they're doing is marking them and leaving them there. So it's going to be a situation. It's going to take a long time to get this taken care of. The water is so murky and the current is so swift that, you know, half of these vehicles probably are down rivers, downstream somewhere, and it's just really just a pathetic situation right now.
And the impact on the economy has got to be extreme because not only, A, is it affecting the infrastructure, and, of course, this is the main way of getting across that river, but I cannot even imagine now. I mean, well, let's put it this way. Whatever it would typically cost and however much time it would typically take to build a bridge across that river is going to be tripled at this point because there's going to be so much hyper-scrutiny on it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. They're checking other bridges, too, three other bridges of similar design to see. And, of course, now we're getting bridge checks all over the nation now, New York and everywhere. So it's one of those things that, you know, it's 40 years old. And you know what a lot of people theorize? And I think this makes sense. These people aren't engineers, but they're coming up to me and they're telling me that, you know, it's 40 years old, and, you know, you get tough winters here in Minneapolis. You get really tough summers, too, and very hot summers. It's very hot today. And, you know, you think of all the chemicals they put down for, you know, the de-icing of the bridges and everything else during the winter. That's going to take a toll in 40 years. Corrosion, you know, a lot of things like that to look at.
Yeah. All right. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy in Minneapolis, Minnesota. All right, my friend, enjoy to whatever extent you can the rest of your afternoon, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, sir. Ed McCarthy. There you go. All right. It's 503-733-2970. I think we need something to pick us up, Sarah. That was kind of a downer call. I can't imagine what we would possibly thank you.
Chocolate rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain. Chocolate rain.
And you know, every time
a baby born will die before the sin. Chocolate rain.
And when he says chocolate rain, I keep thinking of Chubby Rain from Bowfinger.
Here again, chocolate rain.
I cannot state enough how much this voice doesn't fit the guy that it's coming out of.
It's a small kid with, like, little wire-rimmed glasses and a white T-shirt on.
If you know the actor Andre Brower, he was in Homicide: Life in the Street, and Andre Brower is most known to mainstream American audiences as he was the angel who was Nicolas Cage's partner in City of Angels. Kind of the tall, slender black man who was Nicolas Cage's sort of sidekick angel.
Uh-huh.
That guy. This looks exactly like what a teenage Andre Brower looked like, I'll guarantee you. But, like, way nerdier. And then he's just got this voice that...
And he has the strangest thing with all of the side of his mouth.
Well, yeah, no, he's got this bizarre sort of wooden timbre to his voice. It's kind of freaking me out. Oh, wait, there we go. He's a Chocolate Rain phone call. Hello, sir. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir. Hi.
No, we'll never know.
Sir? Wait, can we drop the music for a second? Maybe he can't.
Oh, it's not even, he can't even hear it.
Hello, sir? Oh, come on. It says here on the screen, knows about Chocolate Rain song.
Chocolate Rain.
What is his name, John?
Seldom mentioned on the
rain. Yeah, and that we'll never know. Thank you. Thanks for leaving us unsatisfied.
Maybe it's better not to know.
You're leaving us. Car control. Now, thanks for leaving us lifting couches, sir.
Worse than swearing, worse than calling names. Chocolate Rain.
I don't know what it is.
All right, it's 503-733-2970.
That was pick me up, though, Rick. You were right.
It didn't really. It's not.
I think maybe until we understand it, we can't understand if it's a pick me up or not.
I don't even really know. It sounds like something that was written in the depths of kind of psychotic episode.
You and I were walking in the halls during the break, going, chocolate
rain. And it is. It's not just the words and the music. It is like that weird inflection that he's got. That's what makes it so strange. I don't want to say it's haunting as such.
It kind of isn't. It sounds almost like video game music in the back.
Yeah, well, that's clearly like the Casio on demo mode in the background, but I'm
it
just
is
saying.
They flashed the keyboard of his hands.
Really? Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, do we know that it's actually him singing this? I mean, is it? Do we know that he's not lip-syncing?
I've been watching. I'm so lame. I've been sitting here watching it for like 15 minutes before the show.
Of course you have.
Trying to match up, like, see if he was enunciating it. And it literally does look like he's singing it.
Spending a lot of time analyzing the chocolate rain. All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey. What's up?
Well, here's another worry for you, especially for anybody down in the L.A. area.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a friend of mine who graduated from a Midwestern university 20 years ago with a degree in civil engineering. After 10 years and three academic suspensions, he graduated with a 1.5 GPA.
Fantastic. And now he's out there building bridges that span the rivers.
No, actually, in fact, he got a job with L.A. County Department of Transportation.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's fantastic.
Enjoy.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for that. Yeah, I'll feel wonderful the next time I'm crossing a bridge. Let's see. Let's see. This is now. See, people are emailing and asking about the Fremont thing. Now, I don't really know. We haven't found an answer.
How can we even actually figure out if that is true?
I don't know because we'll do this. If we have a chance here, we'll talk to Scotty J here in a second, and then we will we'll talk to Lisa Goddard. We have a new news hour coming up. We're in that awkward period of time where I got about 90 seconds before Lisa's supposed to be on the show. So I only have enough time. I don't have enough time to get into anything heavy. I just have enough time to say this. So we had all of these phone calls and emails this week, and it's one of those things that is, see, there's Lisa right there, that is either, it's either true or it is a very well-established urban legend. And we got all kinds of email about this yesterday, about this guy who built the Fremont Bridge, who supposedly has said to, like, everybody with a microphone, like, hey, I built that bridge, and I'll never drive on it because it's a, you know, cause it's just an accident waiting to happen. Not our words. Those are allegedly his words. So we're trying to figure out whether or not it's true, but before we can do that, we have to figure out who the guy is. So we're trying to figure out who the guy is that either, you know, that constructed or designed, made the initial schematics, the blueprints for the Fremont Bridge. So pleased to be letting us know who that is if you are privy to that information. I haven't even gotten to this bull riding thing, and you know what I did? I completely neglected to pay off that radio picture tease that I said I wasn't going to neglect to pay off.
Oh, yeah.
At like 11:05 today, I was like, this is not going to be one of those things that I don't ever reveal. I will tell you in 5 minutes, and I never revealed it. And I can't do it now because we got Lisa. Don't let me forget to talk about the great radio picture that somebody sent me this morning that will bring, you know what it is, as my mother will say, it'll lift up the corners of your heart. It'll put a little bit of a spring in your step today. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello, and how are you on this fine Friday?
I am doing A-okay.
A-okay, really?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
I am dandy. I am fantabulous. I'm wonderful. I'm fantastic.
Wow,
geez,
sunshine just coming out of your pores.
I am all... Yes, I'm having it looked at. I'm all the colors of the Skittles rainbow. Hey, before we do anything else, before we talk about anything having to do with, you know, current events and whatnot, I got this email sent to us by a listener. There's a query that we sent to the news department of CBS Radio Portland. And, of course, our news department, our only skill really is fabricating stories and passing off our own thinly veiled opinion as fact. So when it comes to real truth, we're not really all that equipped to deal with it. So I got this question. It says, hey, Rick, can you guys figure out if this is true? And this is a question sent to us by a listener. It says, here is a sobering statistic. There's been a monthly average... there's been a monthly average of 160,000 troops in the Iraq theater of operations during the last 22 months and a total of 2,112 deaths. And this is from some time ago, but at one point we were at 2,000 deaths. He says that gives a firearm death rate of 60 per 100,000 soldiers. However, the firearm death rate in Washington, D.C., is 80.6 per 100,000 persons for the same period. This means that you are about 25% more likely to be shot and killed in the U.S. Capitol than you are in Iraq.
I've heard those stories before. I should know those statistics by heart. You're right.
Now, is this a made-up statistic? Because the sad fact is it just sounds so believable. It sounds so utterly true. I don't know whether it's real or not. Do you?
I don't know if it's real. Number one suspicion, my number one question about it is, the body count in Baghdad is not the most reliable in the world. You know, there's a lot of bodies that go to the morgue, show up. You know, they're getting on that, you know, but I think they don't really have a great firearm death statistician in Baghdad necessarily that you can really rely on.
Well, it's in fact, if we could just sort of dovetail into that, did I read the other day that the Baghdad parliament or the Iraqi parliament is taking like another 6 weeks of vacation?
Yeah. I think it's a month of vacation. They're taking August off, much like our own Congress.
I mean, I don't even really know how to feel about them. There's part of me who feels, I mean, that I guess I should sort of be angry that presumably my tax dollars are going over there to construct a government which is now just going to be empty for the next month. But on the other hand, I suppose, like, I don't really know what the Iraqi government would be doing if they were there. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a little too early to be passing beautification laws for Baghdad or something. So I'm not really even sure what they would be doing if they were there.
You know, actually, it's the, I guess, sentinel work of the Iraqi government. This is essentially their Continental Congress. It's not exactly a parallel comparison, but they're doing the work of setting up the future of Iraq, and that means the oil law. That means what role do former Baathists, could they have in the government? It's the most controversial, sticky stuff that they're trying to work out in their constitution, and they haven't been able to do it so far, but that's what they're there to do.
All right. All right, so we've got just diving straight into the actual news today. We've got this, the White House Deputy Political Director, Scott Jennings. I mean, now they're rolling out people I've never even heard of.
I know. I'm sad that you couldn't listen to that guy. I think you would have enjoyed him.
Did you see that headline on the Drudge Report this morning that said that the House erupted in, quote, chaos this morning?
This is what I want to get to, and I'm sad. If we had, I almost was going to jump right in at this live shot and bring you right to the House floor right now, but I just missed my window, and the House has honestly 30 seconds ago or maybe a minute ago gone into recess because the chaos has continued. The House of Representatives, I have to say, this may be one of the most chaotic days our government has seen in a long time.
That's fantastic.
To backtrack, since now it doesn't matter what's going on the House floor, I'll get to that. Last night, the House took a vote on essentially whether or not food stamps should be given to illegal immigrants. It's more complicated than that, but that was the main issue. As the vote was closing, the vote total, I believe, was 215 to 213 in favor of banning food stamps from going to illegal immigrants,
right.
A win for Republicans by two votes. But as the gavel comes down, the Democrat who's in charge of the House announces that the vote failed and that Democrats lost, or Republicans lost. So Republicans are looking at this vote board that says they won, and they're looking at a Democratic chairman who's announcing that they lost, and there was just an eruption of hollering, hooting. It was almost like the British Parliament for a minute.
Fantastic.
But it was fantastic, and it's gone on until this morning. Republicans are irate. Democrats say the problem wasn't with us, the problem was with the vote board, and that actually it was a tie vote when he banged the gavel down, and that the truth is that the motion did fail because we added another, you know, the last-minute votes, and the vote board was the problem. And Republicans have said, you know, until we get to take that vote again, because we think you guys essentially committed fraud for the American people, until we get to take that vote again, we're going to block all of these other things you're trying to pass today. Now, this is the day before Congress breaks for the next month. So it's fantastic. All these guys are trying to get out of here. There's huge legislation that they need to pass today. One, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, how exactly our spies can listen to who. They've got to pass that before they leave. They're also trying to pass money to repair the bridge in Minnesota, so that's a big one. There's a huge number of issues they're trying to get to, but the Republicans have said, we got to deal with this. Meanwhile, just as they're kind of trying to work stuff out, and the FISA situation is its own nightmare. The Democrats and the White House are not agreeing. They can't figure that out. So they're starting to get back on their feet. The House is back in session, maybe in the last hour, and they take another vote, and all of a sudden the voting machines don't work in the House. So the whole House is thrown into chaos. Nobody really quite knows if the vote that they're taking should count or if it shouldn't count. What's wrong with the computers? Is it a conspiracy? What's going on? So for the last half hour, I've been listening to them trying to figure out these are the leaders of our nation, many of them very smart, skilled people. But when confronting a problem of failed computers, I think everyone just sort of really has a difficult time, including
all right. Well, so let's go back to this business of the House erupting in chaos. All right, so
yeah, which has happened now twice, if you ask me.
So the vote is 215 to 213, supposedly.
Well, that's what it said on the vote board.
So when there's a dispute, does the tie go to the vote board, or does the tie go to what the guy with the gavel says?
Right.
Or does nobody know?
this is not something that anyone knows. I've asked tons of reporters who've been up here forever. No one can remember something like this. I think the problem is that, you know, you had your Democrat who was banging the gavel jumped too early on doing that, and he needed to wait till the vote board was adjusted. And also, apparently, the clerk had not reported the vote to him. I suspect what happened is they twisted somebody's arm, or somehow they got it so that someone who was voting for the bill moved against, and he saw that person cast their vote, the chairman, and then immediately said, okay, that's it. I know that vote is in. I'm banging the gavel. We're done, because I don't want anybody else to change their vote. But the fact is the clerk hadn't even counted the vote yet. It just gets so ridiculous. And so the vote board still showed that Republicans were winning the vote, even though perhaps they weren't, and it's not clear. Or did he just say, I'm done with this vote. I'm going to just say that you lost. That's what Republicans are alleging. Pelosi and her gang say that's not true at all, blah, blah. But I think in the end the tie goes to whoever is holding the gavel, whoever is running Congress. And they seem to be steaming right ahead. They're not going to come back to that vote. They say it was perfectly legal. Now, had they been in the minority, had this been Nancy Pelosi 2 years ago, she would be tearing her hair out at Republicans, which she did when Republicans did some kind of questionable voting procedures. They didn't do anything like this, but I don't know. Just goes to show you, these guys are all very similar, except in how they vote.
Fantastic. Here's a great idea for a television series, and I know you got to go because you got your top of the hour thing.
I don't actually. I'm free as a bird.
Well, then let me just say this. I think that all of these really confrontational, just these conflagrations that happen in the Congress, there needs to be some. This is how you can get Americans interested in government. There needs to be. I don't know if you remember when they were doing the O.J. civil trial, but during the O.J. civil trial, as opposed to the criminal trial, there were no television cameras allowed because Ito had had such a problem keeping the press under control during the O.J. criminal trial, and there was that moment during the O.J. criminal trial when they inadvertently showed the jury on television and so forth, and so there were no cameras during the O.J. civil trial, but what they did instead is that E! Had a 30-minute dramatization, a 30-minute reenactment every evening where the highlights from the O.J. trial were reenacted by actors. I think there needs to be some 22 minutes. This is a total Padachevsky fever dream kind of a thing here. But there needs to be some sort of a 22-minute nightly recap of all of the high points from governmental affairs for this day, right, boiled down, not fabricated, but boiled down and edited for time, clarity, and entertainment value,
right,
and then it reenacted on television by professional actors. And you just have that in place of the evening news. Seriously, you put that on instead of Katie Couric, you're talking like a 40 share right there. You know what I mean?
That's fantastic.
So instead of having Katie Couric sitting there going, well, there was a kerfuffle in the House today. Instead of that, man, you just get a bunch of actors and you have them down there and you just have them act it out and then you intersperse it with commercials for Tide or whatever. That's how you get Americans to follow the news.
I think that's great. I would not be surprised if that does actually happen.
I'm saying someday when Rupert Murdoch does that and it becomes a huge sensation, you remember Rick Emerson had that idea in 2007.
I'm both delighted and frightened.
All right, fantastic. That sums it up better than anything I could possibly say. There's no better sentence to take us into the weekend. You enjoy the rest of your day, Lisa.
Yeah,
we will talk to you soon.
All right,
there you go. Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Fantastic. All right. It's 503-733-2970. We should probably break, shouldn't we? All right. When we break, oh, that's right. I got to do the, I'm sorry. Thank you. Scotty, most of these Madonna songs you're giving me, I'm not saying they're terrible. I'm just saying a lot of these Madonna songs you're giving me are not the ones I would have chosen. Really? Okay. Well, you know what? We'll do this. Here, we'll do this one because this is the best she ever looked in a video except for Like a Prayer. This is Beautiful Stranger, right? Yeah, this is the one from Austin Powers. Yeah. She looked really good in this video. This is the video where she's riding around with Mike Myers in a car, and she's in that green dress that she's falling out of. She looks fantastic. She was already like 80 years old. She looked beautiful in this video. Yeah, this is really the second best she ever looked. This, the only place she ever looked better than this was that one sequence in Like a Prayer where she's dancing in front of those burning crosses with the auburn-colored hair. I really do sound like a stalker sometimes. Stalker. All right, back after this with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth for the new News Hour. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. is the album version, too. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't seen this video in forever when she's ready to make out with the hot black guy.
Hot black Jesus?
Oh, yeah. I went to Mississippi the other week, and I went to this general store there.
Mississippi Avenue.
Yeah, Mississippi Avenue. Went to this bar called the Crowbar. And they had all of these famous paintings, but instead of, like, The Last Supper, instead of all white people, it was all black people.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it. It is the most amazing-looking painting.
I thought you were going to say it was, like, all Madonna.
No, it was really cool. And, like, the angels, like, the two, like, white angels, they have them as black angels.
When I went to that store at Lloyd Center, that home decor store, whatever, the handmade sign and the cardboard table with all their stuff. In addition to all the Scarface and Dale Earnhardt merchandise, the one thing is they did have a whole section of black Jesus paintings. Which is kind of cool. And he was, and I shouldn't say this, but he really was like hot black Jesus. Like he was, and he clearly was Jesus. Like it wasn't just some guy. It was Jesus, but like with a full-on defined six-pack. And like, just like the soulful sex eyes. Hello, my child. Would you like to come back to my loft? I mean, it was like, it was kind of seductive Nubian Jesus. This is the best song ever. Really?
This guy is so good looking.
You know, this video has something to please and offend everybody, doesn't it? Okay, we have to stop or I'll just sit here. I'll just stop and listen to Madonna all day if we don't stop. Ladies and gentlemen at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Breaking news out of Hollywood. Mission Impossible star Bing Rhames' dogs have mauled and killed his housekeeper.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, this happened in Brentwood this morning. Apparently, the housekeeper was watching over the dogs and the home. The four of them are mastiffs, and there's an English bulldog, which is probably harmless.
Those mastiffs are like 200 pounds,
yeah,
right?
They've been taken into custody by animal control.
Jesus.
When they arrived, they found a 40-year-old black man on the front lawn deceased. The actor apparently is out of town.
Yeah.
But the dogs went psycho. This house is in Brentwood and is currently under extreme investigation. Animal Services is also at.
So he had two mastiffs and a bulldog?
Four mastiffs.
Now, four?
Yeah.
I mean, now look, I've never seen a mastiff in real life.
Four dogs in all. Mastiffs and a bulldog.
So I've seen pictures of mastiffs and I've read about them.
Oh, that's what they look like.
But I mean,
they're huge things.
God damn. Because what's his name? Jeremy down the hall brought his St. Bernard in last week. And that St. Bernard, which is one of the biggest dogs I've ever seen in real life, was 125 pounds.
Yeah.
Mastiffs are like two something. They'll kill you. I mean, they'll kill you. Well, clearly,
obviously they did.
As we've learned, they'll kill you dead. Jesus, imagine that's your dad. Look, I need you to babysit my 16 mastiffs and a pit bull, so here's $5. God damn. Well, that's a bad way to die. All right.
Then police have busted a dog fighting ring in North Portland and seized seven pit bulls. The party's over for tonight. The kennel at Seward Avenue was raided and police found guns, photos, and a dog fighting and marijuana along with the dogs.
This is where?
In North Portland. The owner also faces drug charges and child neglect charges.
Oh, that sounds great. You're neglecting dogs and children all at once. That's fantastic. Really, you're just one short of a hat trick. And by the way, before anybody starts calling up or sending me this clip, do not send me the Ving Rhames clip from Pulp Fiction where he says, let's sick the dogs on his ass and find out what he... It's too soon. Don't send it. Don't call up and joke about it. Don't call up and make the observation. You have to wait till at least Monday for that. Here's Tim Riley.
More breaking Hollywood news. Nicole Richie will not go to the Who's Cow tonight. There are reports circulating this morning that she would turn herself in today, but that will not happen. She'll do her time at the Lynwood Jail, the joint Paris made world famous. Back to local news. Why, there's going to be a great time for the whole family at the Clark County Fair. Not only will there be elephant ears this year... There's going to be beer and wine on sale. Yes, it's in for a world of change. You can depend on the cotton candy, the vintage tractors, corn dogs, carnival rides, livestock galore, and equestrian. Oh, they're going to be milkshakes, too. But now...
So there's going to be equestrian milkshakes?
Yes, equestrian
really?
Milkshakes. They forgot a comma. Justin Guarini, along with beer and wine sales for the first time.
I like how Justin Guarini is right between cotton candy and milkshakes.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
They're going to be selling a Coors Light and Mike's Hard Lemonade from the winery in Goldendale, Washington.
You want to have about 15 funnel cakes and then just load up on a bunch of wine and then go ride the Tilt-A-Whirl seven or eight, nine times in a row. That's what you want to do. That's family fun right there.
Alcohol sales don't belong at the fair, say some. It's trouble waiting to happen. Oh, but there are other things there. For $20 a pooch, owners can enter their pets in Doc Dogs, an outdoor canine long jump competition. That's next to the beer hall, apparently. There'll also be a pirate adventure with roaming buccaneers and kids digging for buried treasure while their parents drink.
That should be the tagline for every Clark County Fair spot. Blah, 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 while your parents drink. That's wonderful. Excellent. Okay.
A transient from Sandy is being accused of videotaping up women's skirts at a Sandy festival.
Where does a transient get a video camera? You know, transients in this country are not like transients elsewhere.
Well, they're getting cheaper. Even a transient can afford one. Mm-hmm. 42-year-old Brett Hager is facing charges of invasion of privacy. He used a backpack to hide a video camera that he was using to look up women's skirts. Apparently, this happened at the Sandy Mountain Festival.
I don't get the whole thing of the upskirt videos. You know what I mean?
I don't either.
I don't really understand that. It's like, if you want to see chicks in their underwear, first of all, if you have a video camera, it seems like you've got enough money to get on the internet for an hour or so. Secondly, unless you're just hanging out where all the women just go commando style, it seems like you're not really going to see anything anyway. That's just a weird, I think that officially qualifies as a fetish. The upskirt and what's the other one? The down the shirt, the down blouse videos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that officially qualifies as some sort of weird peeping Tom Chuck Berry bathroom camera kind of a thing. Because you're not really going to see anything anyway. It's just that's a whole lot of creepy is what it is. I'm surprised that they don't sell some kind of, you know, spy shoe that just has a camera in the tip of the shoe. That's a thing you could probably sell.
In other news, two men have been arrested after shooting a rifle while driving along the Columbia River Highway. At Troutdale, police responded to a report of shots being fired from a red Honda Civic. Witnesses said the car's passenger was hanging out the window, firing the rifle out of the car. The witness said the car's passenger was hanging out the window, firing the rifle out of the car.
Excellent.
Just in Troutdale.
You know, people... I was just going to say that people never...
They were on their way to the Clark County Fair, apparently.
To drink.
Have a Coors Light to celebrate.
I was going to say that people never disappoint, but really it's the people constantly disappoint, which is really why they never let us down.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Let's see. The shots are fired into the ground and at a stop sign. 20 shots are fired in all.
Excellent.
Under arrest is 18-year-old Scott Gay and 20-year-old Mario Gonzalez. They were pulled over on Stark Street at Southeast 35th. Why, that's close to your area.
It really is. That's like right up the street from me. Mm-hmm. Jesus. Okay, now it's getting too close. Now when it's entering Rick Emerson's neighborhood. Not in my backyard, that's all I have to say.
So, getting updated, that guy who people thought were either beaten up or pushed from that bridge yesterday on Highway 217 committed suicide.
Oh, that's that.
Now back to this story. We touched upon this in earlier newscast. During the investigation into the strangulation death of Danny Countryman, police learned that the sister's boyfriend had violated his parole. Rick Sprayberry, the boyfriend of 20-year-old Ashley Countryman, was taken into custody for probation violations. The investigation reveals that Sprayberry... That's a Sprayberry. Had a criminal...
Is that some kind of a breakfast cereal?
I guess so.
Some sort of a pesticide-filled cereal?
He had a criminal record involving sex with a 13-year-old. Sprayberry lives in the Balboa complex.
It's Ron Jeremy's breakfast cereal.
Where Danny Countryman's body was discovered after a late-night party held in Danny's honor at the Milwaukee apartment
honor.
Complex. Juvenile records show these come from Spokane County.
Of course.
Sprayberry was charged on 9/11/2000 with two counts of rape of a child, second degree. It was later amended to second degree assault, a Class B felony. Sprayberry was 17 at the time. He pled guilty and sentenced to 35 weeks in juvenile detention. He also has a criminal record in Oregon. He was on supervision for Marion County for February 2003 auto theft. He's also charged with driving under the influence. This date is wrong. July 10th, 2008. Maybe they're speculating.
He's already planning his next defense. What are your plans to get out of here? Some guys go to Disneyland. He just goes to...
July 10th, 2008.
He goes to Clackamas to drive drunk. All right.
So much for that.
Jesus. Hey, did they ever investigate that Tito guy? The guy who on his MySpace
no,
was all like, hey, I had sex
that.
With a dead girl.
Yeah. That was strange.
Yeah. What are we... Hey, Scotty, did we already hear from George in Wilsonville this week? Have we imposed a once-a-week limit on that guy? Scotty says we
I believe so.
Scotty says no. Is he paying you to say that? All right, fine. Oh, Sarah, is my computer up?
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Hello, George.
Rick.
Hi.
Color me Clyde-like, but I think it's very unusual that they've only recovered four bodies from the bridge operations. Forget about the missing people. I can't believe that the death toll is only four. I heard it was seven the first day.
It's not only four. It was nine like a week ago or whenever.
Yeah, but now it's down to four for the past 3 days. So I suspect there's a chamber of commerce somewhere involved. It's very odd.
Wait, is this a real conspiracy theory, or are you just winding me up?
You know, in legal terms, there is such a thing as conspiracy to commit murder, et cetera. There is the term conspiracy.
Yeah.
So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, but that's for real stuff. That's not for made-up crazy things. Five dead, eight missing.
And
all right.
And this bridge is within the ward of the only Muslim congressman of the U.S.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying it's
why do you hate Muslims, George?
Why do I hate America? It's more like it.
And children.
No. Well, yes.
Okay.
Hey, listen, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
I was suggesting to Scotty to get the guy who played Belloc for an interview so we could ask him personally how Belloc is pronounced.
Yeah, no, I think we've moved on from that.
Okay, well, anyways, vis-a-vis Europe, I'll just kick it off and then I'll leave you alone for a while. Vis-a-vis Europe, when I left for Europe in 85, I was a total Ronald Reagan Republican, and I came back as an anti-oligarch, so be careful.
Because what?
Because you might come back and no longer be the Rick Emerson.
I might come back as a liberal.
Yeah, might come back somewhat kind of open-minded and world-traveled.
That'll never happen.
Oh, please
Thank
no.
Thank you. Bye now. All right, there you go. All right, here's Tim Riley.
And this out of Washington, the Democrats have resorted to paper ballot voting. This goes back to 1938. As the House electronic system undergoes a mysterious engineering problem.
Yeah, George.
The tally board is broken. Members can't see how colleagues voted or how much time is left.
That's fantastic.
The House is erupting into chaos.
Excellent.
But they don't beat each other up like they do in Asian countries.
Oh,
I'm stating a fact.
I don't even know what you're talking about now.
Oh, you go to some of these small Asian countries, they're always beating each other up.
Are they well dressed as ninjas?
No, they're dressed in suits.
They're always
just like Americans.
Do you mean when they vote?
Yeah.
Like, are you talking about the people or the politicians?
The politicians.
They're beating each other up? Oh, I remember what you're talking about now. I do
it
remember
all
that.
The time.
I do remember seeing stuff about that. Okay. I was confused there for a second. Because I was just thinking of the British thing where they have the, whatever, that hollering day or whatever it is, where they yell at
Oh, Prime Minister's question time.
Totally, where he goes, the United Kingdom is strong, and there's a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of, like, guys muttering in the background. That's wonderful. Hey, by the way, not that I really care about this because I don't even vote, but did you see that in Ohio they destroyed all of those voting records, which is a violation of federal law?
Yes.
There were all those voting records in Ohio that the liberals were trying to, you know, like the Randy Rhodes is the worldwide. Like, and there's been a fraud and I want to investigate. And it's they somebody just shredded them all the other day. And I think there's a federal law that says that you can't destroy those voting records while there's an investigation or something. And so they went left-wing nutcase party went to, like, investigate them, and they found some guy just putting him in a furnace or whatever. So those are all gone. So there you go.
Oh, the latest Zogby poll shows 3% of Americans approve of how Congress is handling the war in Iraq. 24% say the same for the president.
Okay. Well done. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello!
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up, brother man?
Hey, you know the guy that's in the Madonna video, the Black Jesus guy?
Yes.
You know, he's also the main guy from Cool Running.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah.
It was a good... The 80s were good to that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, it's hard to... How old are you, sir?
24.
Okay, so you probably don't remember this, but, I mean, it is hard to remember exactly how much furor, how much controversy, or controversy, as they say in Britain, that Madonna video for Like a Prayer caused. Because I do believe that Diet Pepsi had just launched a huge ad campaign with her featuring the Like a Prayer song, and she must have calculated this in advance. This is one of those things where Madonna, again, was, like, so much smarter than everybody around her, where they're like, Diet Coke is like, well, we'd love to... I think she must have gone to Diet Coke, and she said, look, would you... And this is back when she still talked like an American. Look, do you want to be sponsored, you know, sponsor my new video? And Diet Coke said, sure, you're the biggest thing in the world. Why not? Okay, that's great. Pay me, like, $1 billion. And so Diet Coke paid Madonna all this money, and then she unveils the video where she is falling out of her dress, dancing in front of burning KKK crosses, and making out with a hot black Jesus. And that commercial aired once. That aired one time. It never aired again, and they still had to pay her everything, and she got headlines everywhere. So, God bless her. But it was a huge scandal, and I was still, God, when was Like a Prayer? When did Like a Prayer come out? Anybody? Like 87? Something like that?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So I was what, 15, 16? So I was still going, I guess I wasn't going to Catholic school, but I was still had a lot of Catholic friends. I was in a Catholic circle, and man, they just went bat-ass about it. I mean, they just went crazy over that Madonna video. So, God love her, and she looks just hot as balls in that video. There's no getting around it. So, anyway. All right, thank you, sir.
No problem.
That's Brett. There you go. God bless you, Brett. Fantastic. All right. I don't even know where to go from there. Who wants to hear more about Madonna?
Oh, I do.
All right. This email says, Rick, about Madonna. Now, see, here we are. We're entering the whole high concept. We're not even in a high concept section of the show, sir. We have a bell that rings, like some, like a starting bell and then a closing bell, like they have at the New York Stock Exchange. That is like our high concept segment of today's program. Like, you know, ding, 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 we now start today's high concept section. And we go for like 9 minutes, and then it ends. Because we could do, today, we could do a whole high concept Friday thing about Madonna. And when she was the hottest, like this, Rick, I beg to differ, says this man. The hottest Madonna video ever is Vogue. Retro 40s glamour, black and white. Boy, she is hot there. I don't get the conical breast Madonna doesn't really do anything for me, though. That was around the same time she started getting pointy bosoms. I'm not with that. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Excuse me.
Okay.
I'm back. Okay. Big screens are going up around Portland parks for a drive-in experience. These are called Big Screens on the Green. Movies in the Park started last weekend and will continue till the end of the summer at several parks around town. The screen is big, 268 square feet, and the projection and sound system are exceptional. The flicks start at dusk and are dependent on weather permitting. Starting later in August will be dive-in movies at local swimming pools. Swimmers are encouraged to bring along an inner tube to enjoy big screen showings.
And this is, where is this?
Various parks around Portland. Go to the Portland Parks
really cool.
Website. Yeah.
They ought to do that thing here that they do in L.A. where they have, where they do movies in cemeteries. Because that, man, that attracts a huge crowd in L.A. at that Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And it's all
the
like...
cemeteries have the best lawns.
And they have a great lawn, and then they have a huge... They project it on one of the sides of the mausoleum. It sounds morbid, but it's not. It's a total kink crowd, too. It's all like wine and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like $12 a head or something, but it's fantastic. And they show just all of these classic films in the middle of this beautiful cemetery at night. It's like warm, and there's like... You can bring food, and it's a very cool thing. They ought to do that here. You know, I bet that's the thing that Portlanders are getting into. Sort of the heralding crowd here would be into that. All right.
Those two seventh-grade boys facing criminal charges for swatting girls' behinds have received many letters and more than $50,000 in location donations to a legal defense fund, part of a national outpouring of support over the past week. Many of the letter writers and donors are critical of Yamhill County DA Brad Berry, who initially brought felony sex abuse charges against Corey Mashburn and Ryan Collegian in February. Apparently, this happened in the spring, that the boys were spanking the girls' behinds during Slap Butt Day at Patton Middle School.
Slap Butt Day, by the way, is almost certainly not what the students really call it.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost certainly called Grab Ass Day or something like that. The students don't say slap butt.
Even for middle school.
Yeah, seriously. Well, this is one of those stories that I think we blinked and missed, because it's apparently everybody in the country was talking about it except for us, and we live here.
Mm.
It was on the front page of the Oregonian. Risque behavior tests schools.
Dirty dancing again?
It's more of the grinding, Tim.
Oh.
By Suzanne Partington. Two boys slap girls' bottoms in the school hallway. A first-grade girl makes, quote, kissy faces at a boy. A high school couple make out in front of other kids. Should these students be punished for sexual harassment? Boy, you know, I always say that it's better to be a teenager now than it was when I was growing up. It is true. It's much better to be a teenager now, but boy, does it suck to be a student.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to be a teenager, but it's much worse to be a student. Just a bunch of little people with little power. The case of two McMinnville boys who were suspended for 5 days for spanking girls. Really, there's no way to ask this without... Well, never mind.
Ask it.
No, I don't even want to say it. I was just going to say, was this a cross gender lines thing? Was this like a day where everybody spanked everybody? Like, did girls spank boys? dogs living with cats, total mass hysterica, anarchy, hysteria, whatever that is. Anyway, and then over here to the sidebar, it says, raises questions about where schools should draw the line and what should happen to students when it's crossed. I mean, this is one of those things like dipping pigtails in ink and bra snapping. Did bra snapping ever really happen, or is that one of those things that, like, they just sort of reference as, like, a shorthand for bad boy behavior? Sarah, did you ever get your bra snapped?
Oh, I think, like, yeah.
Really?
I mean, like, seventh grade, like, sixth or seventh grade.
I didn't know if that was a thing that boys actually did, or if that was just some sort of kooky thing from the 50s that we just referenced.
No, I'm pretty sure they did.
Like a panty... Let me ask you this. What is a panty raid? You always hear that referenced in old movies, like about colleges. Well, what happens? Well, the co-eds are going panty raiding. I don't know what a panty raid is. A panty raid sounds like some sort of gang raping. But
no,
I'm almost sure
involves
that it's
undergarments.
I know, but I mean, well, so does a raping. I'm just saying, I don't...
Well, this is the effect of undergarments.
I don't...
That don't belong to you.
I don't... So is panty raiding...
It's like an organized Sun Koo Kim activity.
For a minute, I thought you meant a Kim Jong-il activity, because it's like the three...
Oh.
The three
no,
hyphenated name. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's Kim Jong-il's panty raid. She's gone completely off the tracks here. But a panty raid, so is that when male college students...
Yes.
...would go to a female dormitory?
That's correct.
And then steal their underwear?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they do this?
Well, because they're not trying to, you know, swallow goldfish or cram each other in phone books.
Because they're not sitting on a flagpole. All right. And then the sidebar says, what is sexual harassment in school? Sexual harassment in schools, this is in Portland apparently, is, let's see, this is a report from the American Association of University Women Education Foundation. That's a fun-loving group of people. Mm-hmm. Unwelcome, I bet they party down, unwelcome sexual conduct that interferes with a student's ability to learn, study, work, or participate in school activities. It includes such behavior as insults and name-calling, off-color jokes. That's an interesting phrase, actually, off-color jokes. Hmm. What is the color that you're off of, and how are you off of said color?
I believe it's an older term.
Or displays of sexually suggestive objects or pictures, Scotty. Intimidation by words or actions. Unwanted touching, such as pinching, panting. Oh, I'm sorry, patting. Grabbing, poking. I'm sorry, I was a victim of unwanted poking earlier today. Or rubbing, I'm sorry, snorting. Or rubbing against a student's body. Pressure for sexual activity. Pressure? Making a student participate in sexual conduct as a condition of taking part in school activities or getting an education. And finally, if you did not know this, what is sexual harassment in school? All of the above, plus sexual assault or rape. So, there you go. So quit the raping. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Workplace anger, who wins? That's the topic of this latest survey. A man who gets angry at work will be admired, but if a woman shows anger in the workplace, she is liable to be seen as out of control and incompetent. What's more... The findings may have implications for Hillary Clinton to become the first president, woman president. This woman who conducted the survey noted that Clinton was described last year by a leading Republican as too angry to be elected president. Now, the average salary assigned to an angry man is almost $38,000 compared to $23,000 for an angry woman. Participants wrote that the angry female CEO is significantly less competent than all the other males combined. So apparently, if you're a lady, you're not allowed to get mad at work. But if you're a guy, it's expected.
Well, okay. Done and done.
Yeah.
Well, we should probably break here. It's 503-733-2930. Oh, when we get back, I'll talk about this radio station picture that was sent to me.
Oh,
that will
is
make
it posted?
No. I got to send it to Sarah or to myself, and then I'll post it on my blog.
Okay.
Oh, is this Vogue? Well done. That's fantastic.
I like this.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
I say this now, and I know that I am a man, but I'm still going to say this. This was a great moment, actually, in The Devil Wears Prada, where they played this song, because they don't call it Vogue, right?
No,
what do they
call it,
magazine?
Runway.
Runway? But it's clearly supposed to be, what's her name, who wrote
Anna
it?
Anna Wintour.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be, it's based on...
Who's that girl who wrote The Devil Wears Prada? What is her name?
I don't know. I didn't see the book.
Juliet Weinberg or whatever her name is. She, Weisenberg. She worked at Vogue before she wrote that book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't mention they can't use the name Vogue in the movie. So instead, they just play the song Vogue, which is great.
And Anna Wintour was so mad when she wrote that book that she said anyone who appeared in the movie, any designer who used their designs in the movie, she wouldn't ever put them in Vogue again.
Fantastic. That's great.
That's how close it hit home.
That's like if you watch Martin Scorsese's Casino. He was not allowed to say that it was the Stardust Hotel, so he calls it the Tangiers. But you'll notice that the song Stardust appears like 70 times in that movie. This is a great song. You know the great thing about this, the definitive moment in this, and I'm saying in the song, not so much the video, is that moment at the end when the drum machine goes double time and her voice does that little break when she says that it's that get up on the dance floor part at the end. That's fantastic. And I remember seeing her at the... what are you smiling at? I like Madonna.
You're so weird. Okay, no, keep going.
You know?
Well, this will be a whole day of you babbling about Madonna, so let's get to it.
I'm unashamed. I also like chicks, baseball, and jerky. And then she was at the VMAs this year, and Tim probably remembers this, and it was a whole Victorian look. Is that the word I'm looking for? Where it's like the dangerous liaison, powdered faces, and the wig, and like big...
Like the Renaissance?
And the cinched up corset, like the whalebone corset. Jesus, I think...
Whalebone corset? Did you just say whalebone corset?
I think this song is doing something to me. Wait, hold on.
You and Scotty can go out back and smoke.
We can go smoke the penguins out back. Bam! Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Fantastic.
So slowly, slowly, time goes by. So slowly, slowly, time goes by. So slowly, slowly, time goes by. So slowly, slowly, time goes by.
You know the best part about this? Well, other than everything, is how this song, the way it's produced, simulates walking toward a dance club and opening the door and going inside. You ever think about that? Yeah. And this is where she's in the club. It simulates the sound of walking toward a dance club with the door shut because you just hear the muffled thump, and then you open the door and go in. Call Art Bell on the Wild Card Line. This should totally be an Art Bell monkey. I could listen to this song. When this single came out, about a year and a half ago? Something like that?
Longer than that, I think.
Really? This is the one where she's in the video. She's in that dance studio. Yeah. I remember listening to this on repeat all week when it came out. It's a great single. It really is. Hey, it's the Rick Emerson Show. I'm all man. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I feel bad. We got some people who have been very patient and been on hold. We'll get to your calls in just a second. If you've been on hold, hang tight. Still to come today, we got CNN Radio correspondent Steve Kastenbaum joining us. Scott Daly, top five. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
May Hillsborough sex slave master gets life in prison. Vance Roberts was sentenced to 108 years in prison today. He told the judge he doesn't understand what he's being punished for. He claims he was innocent. After terrorizing some 27 women over the years, many testified against him in court, confronting their attacker. You brutalized me. You terrorized me. You left me mentally and emotionally crippled beyond words of explanation. I live in fear. I live in shame, said one. During the trial, Roberts told jurors he brought prostitutes back to his house many times. But he never forced them to have sex or threatened them during sex. If she doesn't enjoy it, I'm not going to enjoy it, he said. Well, he claims the two prostitutes he's accused of kidnapping were willing participants who were paid to come to his home to engage in his sexual exploits. Both women admitted they used to be prostitutes at one time, but said Roberts and his half-brother forced them to do things against their will. This half-brother, also charged in the case, is still on the loose, and Roberts hasn't helped have him tracked down. The two jumped bail in 1991. Roberts' trial was supposed to begin on that year, but he disappeared for nearly 16 years. He lived incognito as a homeless person, panhandling throughout Oregon, until he was finally captured.
Let's see. This is it Kino?
You'll never get it right. We'll just
Keanu.
Hey, you got it right. Congratulations.
Excellent. What's up, sir?
Well, I was thinking about you Monday when you said you were attacked by a gnat, or you had a gnat problem in your house.
They're not really gnats so much as they are fruit flies. I made the mistake of having this standing water in my sink for a day or two, and I have subsequently cleaned the kitchen, gotten rid of the dishes, you know, cleaned it everything. But the fruit flies, they're just there. They can't be gotten rid of.
Yeah, well, I just got attacked by like 100 of them.
Excellent. So I'm not alone.
I was turned on the water and suddenly just 100 of them flew out of the garbage disposal.
That's the thing. I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about the fact that they're in the garbage disposal and that's where they're coming from.
The best part is my head was right over it. I just got like a face full of them.
A cloud full of flies right in the face. Do they sell, like a spray, like an insect killer that is for fruit flies? Maybe that's what
I don't know, but I just turned on the garbage disposal, so if they're in there, they're not happy.
So here's what you can do to minimize the presence of fruit flies, sir. Do you own a funnel?
Yeah.
Okay, here's what you do. You take a piece of either fruit or probably fruit if they're fruit flies. You get a piece of fruit. It doesn't have to be rotten, but a piece of fruit. You put it in a glass. And then you put the funnel in the glass, and you set it on the counter. And then you do that like when you leave for work in the morning or whatever. The fruit flies will go down the funnel into the glass to get at the fruit, but most of them, they can't figure out how to get out again. And so it traps them in the glass, and then you can take it outdoors and get rid of them. So that won't get rid of the problem entirely, but that will minimize the problem. Like 80% of them will get into the glass through the funnel and not get out again.
But I want to use this fly swatter that's also a taser.
Now, wait, do you have that fly swatter that's electrified?
Yes. See, I already shot myself one.
Ah, yeah. See, now I have that, too. Does anybody else here own that, the electrified fly swatter?
I don't have flies.
They're not allowed in Tannisbourne. He only has peacocks.
I just have ants.
Have you ever seen the electrified fly swatter?
Me?
I'm talking to Sarah.
I've seen one hanging in a store before.
I have one. You would love it if you get.
Is it like little
tennis rackets? Yeah, it's like a little tennis racket. You would love it because of spiders or ants or whatever. Yeah, it looks like a little tennis racket with metal mesh. You press a button on it and it electrifies it. And so if you swat a fly in the air with it or touch it to a spider that's on the wall, it just goes and then they're just dead. It's great. I tried it with the fruit flies, but they're too small and a lot of them just go through the wire.
Oh, and I actually finally tried my first VSO.
And what'd you think, sir?
It's the first time I ever felt like I've been slapped by an energy drink.
Slapped by it. I've been physically assaulted by an energy drink. Excellent.
It was good. I mean, I was awake. I was energized. I just, like, I've been slapped.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
All right. Enjoy your fruit fly removal. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, most of us throughout the Northwest are going to have to deal without Amtrak Cascade trains this weekend. 5 of these things have been parked by their manufacturer. And this is Talgo of Spain, who manufacture these trains. They'll be off the tracks throughout the weekend.
Talgo, doing one of its routine monthly maintenance inspections, discovered some deviations to a train set. And so the states of Washington and Oregon, we decided that we needed to pull those trains out of service.
I don't know.
Two of the Amtrak trains did not use these Talgo sets. They're going to run some other trains, apparently.
Train number 510 and 517 will operate on their normal schedule, as well as the Coast Starlight, which operates between Seattle and L.A. That's also different equipment.
Talgo, take me away. Nah, that's a dumb joke. Sorry, skip that.
Let's skip that. Well, guess who's finally arrived in Minneapolis?
Wait, Prince.
No.
D.B. Cooper.
No.
I don't know.
First Lady Laura Bush.
Oh.
She got to look at the bridge collapse.
Oh, yeah.
She commented that first responders and volunteers are very brave indeed.
Over the last 43 hours, the whole country has seen the strength of the Minneapolis-St. Paul community. And because we've seen that strength, we all are confident that the bridge will be rebuilt and that your city will heal.
Who are these people that continually find her to be a likable and trustworthy person? Do you ever see those polls?
She cares about children.
That's the best part, is just that autonomic American response. What do you think about the government is here to help? You know, sort of without even thinking about it. Just a reflexive. I mean, I guess it's only relative to her husband's poll numbers. But, of course, the entire country's come around to the fact that her husband just, you know. I mean, I mean, he's got an IQ that's just below room temperature. I guess they still have latched onto her, some sort of a caring, warm, matronly bosom of compassion.
Until they changed the circuit boards.
When is the last time we had a likable first lady?
Jackie Kennedy?
She, yeah, that's true. I don't remember anything about Rosalind Carter. In fact, the other day, we couldn't even remember she existed. Yeah. Betty Ford was too busy being, you know, falling downstairs drunk. Nancy Reagan was just a terrible, bony little person. Just an awful, cruel, terrible woman with a huge head. You know, we had Barbara Bush, who was like 1,000 years old and scary. Hillary Clinton, enough said there. I mean, Jackie Kennedy really was the last first lady that anybody really liked or cared about, I think. Yeah.
First Lady Bush praises firefighters and emergency workers.
To remember those emergency workers, too. They, a lot of them, especially those big men, seem pretty tough. But we know they have needs just like all the rest of us.
She just,
what the hell is that? Don't be afraid to cry.
Let's hear that one again.
To remember those emergency workers, too. They, a lot of them, especially those big men, seem pretty tough. But we know they have needs just like all the rest of us.
Somebody went
off
the page.
Out of context statement.
Well, I think somebody passed her the wrong card. Carl Rove?
Seriously, somebody mixed that up with her chicken soup.
The first one was fine. And then somebody gave her something out of the recipe box that didn't belong to her.
Seriously, yeah, that was like somebody tore like a little card right out of a Oh, I can't make my cultural joke. Who's the guy that wrote The Men Are from Mars? Women Are from Dr. Philip Gray or whatever the hell his name was?
Maybe.
Whatever. That's just weird. It's like she just took an off-ramp about halfway through that. Yeah, Scotty's nailed it. That really is like an Okie from Muskogee kind of an accent she's got there, too. All right. Well, there you go.
Hundreds of brides-to-be stampeded into Filene's basement store in Northwest Washington this morning for the annual Running of the Brides. Oh, those crazy gals.
I don't understand. What is this?
Let's see. Bridal dresses are on sale. They mark them down as low as $250.
Let me understand this. So this is women standing outside and then rushing into a store to buy wedding dresses.
Correct.
Okay.
Some as low as $250.
You know, there is no male equivalent to that. There is no male equivalent to standing in line to buy a wedding dress. There's just not. That is a thing that is solely and simply a female interest. First of all, guys just rent all that stuff. I can't think of an item of clothing used once.
You know, like
by
an entourage. When Turtle's waiting in line for those
shoes?
Shoes.
I suppose, except I guess you can
argue. I know a lot of men who are obsessed with shoes.
Yeah, but you wear shoes a lot. You wear a dress once. I mean, unless you're part of that 60% of America.
I'm talking if you don't want a bunch of angry brides.
I don't care. They matter to me. I'm just saying, you know. All right. Hey, who wants to know about this great radio picture that I got sent to me?
Oh, I do.
Since we teased it like 4 hours ago. All right. So I won't say who sent this to me, but I will. Let's see here if I can. Let's see. I got the Madonna song stuck in my head. Hold on. Let me just do this and so forth and the. All right. So I got this sent to me by a friend of ours. And this is. You'll have to. I guess I'll have to send this to myself and then have to post it up on my site. But somebody sent this to me this morning. It is a. Guess what's for sale? Guess what somebody saw for sale today?
Love.
I don't even know what that means. No. It's a picture of the old Kissin' van, which is now for sale as is. And I don't even know where it's at. It doesn't even look like it's parked at Entercom. It looks like it's parked at like a side street, like in an alley where it's been abandoned. So it's a great picture of the Kissin' 910 vehicle and with a big sign saying, for sale as is. It's so tempted to find out exactly how much it costs and then to buy it just so we can set fire to it in the parking lot. I think I'm gonna email back to this person. He's probably not gonna get in trouble, but I don't want to say who.
Maybe it's in one of those consignment car lots.
I don't know. Look. Here's a picture of it.
See.
I can't tell where it is.
Oh, Kissin', yeah.
Yeah, it does look like it's in an alley somewhere.
Are there bodies in the back of that thing?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Isn't that fantastic?
That's great.
Doesn't that make you feel a little bit better? So there you go.
Well, not for the people who lost their jobs, of course.
Well, there wasn't anybody there to lose their job. There was like
only the very end.
There was like one guy there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So, anyway. So, there you go. So, I'll get this, I don't know, I'll send this to myself and get it posted up. So, thank you to the person who sent me this picture of the Kissin' vehicle, which is now apparently abandoned in some side street, just waiting to be stripped by vandals and thieves. That's excellent. Yeah, I should go by and see how much it is. I bet I could bargain at this point. All right, here's Tim Riley.
A Greenbelt, Maryland woman, 35-year-old Catherine Ann Delgado, walked into an inn just after midnight, allegedly reporting she had just been the victim of a sexual assault. Police said they interviewed her and determined she had not been assaulted. Officer Hal Dalton said that's when police saw the fudge.
She had a whole lot of pieces of fudge in her pockets. And also, there were so many of them, they were actually spilling out of her pockets. She also had the fudge was stained her clothing and even had some of it smeared on her skin, her arms.
Apparently, she attempted to flush the fudge down the toilet.
Stop the toilet up. That's how much she was trying to put in there. And the bathroom was made a mess. The toilet was overflowing. There was fudge in and out of the toilet.
It's not clear why she attempted to flush the fudge down the toilet.
It didn't make a lot of sense for what she's doing because we had already seen the fudge and had enough evidence. So, you know, her intent was to dispose of the evidence. It was really kind of too late for that.
I don't understand. What?
Apparently, she stole some fudge.
And then but they found her assaulted?
Yes.
There's like a
she claimed she was sexually assaulted.
But really?
To try to take the attention away from the overflowing toilet full of fudge.
And we're sure it was fudge.
That's what they say.
I mean, I had to ask. I don't want to, but it's a question that had to be posed. Mm-hmm. All right, fantastic. This email says, Rick, you ought to take that kiss in the van and do it up Mad Max style, as though 970 had conquered it. Yeah, as though we had, in some alternate reality where we'd conquered it. Here's Tim Riley.
I think that, they don't play oldies anymore, do they?
I have no idea if that station's even on the air anymore. I really don't, and I'm not saying that to be crass or to be snarky. I really have no idea. Look.
Well, how many times do you need to hear us hang on Sloopy every hour?
I don't know, but
can't live without it.
I was going to say it doesn't matter because you can't.
You might have to go out and buy the 45.
It might be 100 times an hour, Tim, but there's nowhere to do it anymore. So I'm pretty, because isn't it Spanish now?
It might be.
I mean, don't waste time tuning over and finding out because I really don't care all that much. I can't, you know.
And why shouldn't it be, really?
I wonder if that decision gets lifted on the, like, on the resume of the person who made it as one of their sterling career moves.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're doing our annual review to see.
Well, that's a jinxed frequency anyway, regardless of what's put on there.
We're doing our review to see which executives we should keep. What are your accomplishments? Well, I managed to lose us an entire frequency. All right, well, fantastic. Will you wait in the lobby, please, and take everything in your desk with you? All right, here's Tim Riley.
Senator and presidential candidate Chris Dodd went head-to-head with Bill O'Reilly this week. O'Reilly objects to Dodd's participation next week in the yearly Cause Convention in Chicago. The convention is the outgrowth of a controversial liberal internet blog, The Daily Cause, which once featured an offensive, sexually suggested cartoon depicting Senator Joe Lieberman. Dodd told O'Reilly that, of course, he was offended by the cartoon.
You're not being candid. Your objection is to this community gathering here. You don't like their politics.
I don't like
That's
their website.
That's a legitimate criticism here. Why don't you focus on that and right. recognize that 500,000
people
I'll
ask you, the question again. You okay with that cartoon, sir?
Of course not. That's not the issue.
He said while standing underneath a high power line somewhere. Was that Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah. O'Reilly says he no longer respects Dodd.
Look, you're a propagandist, Senator. You're a propagandist. I used to respect you. I don't have any respect for you. And if I were Joseph Lieberman, I would never talk to you again. Because this is vile, and you're legitimizing it.
So, is O'Reilly legitimate, or is he just a caricature of himself at this point?
Where is your Dodd now? I'm sorry, you went one way and I went a whole different way with that.
I did.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around the fact that there was a sexually suggestive cartoon featuring Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
That was like, you sort of put it into my brain and it's like a 2-year-old and you're trying to feed it liver. It just sort of spat it back out. My brain didn't want to accept it. No, Bill O'Reilly, let me just say this. Bill O'Reilly, and I'm talking now about the television version of Bill O'Reilly, because his radio show is unbelievably excruciating.
Is that still
dull?
On?
No, I don't think so. Because it's bad. It's terrible. I don't mean any disrespect to Bill O'Reilly. I really don't, because in terms of television, and this is kind of where I know that I say this, and there's some sort of segments of the bleeding heart factions of our audience that just kind of go crazy when I say stuff like this. But really, in terms of television shows, you know, Bill O'Reilly does a great job. He's really good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, you just have to go into it knowing that he's just a huckster. I mean, that's the deal, right? I mean, he's just a big bloviator. And if you can accept the fact that he's just a big sort of moronic carnival barker. Moronic's the wrong word to use, because he's not a moron. He's just, if you can accept the fact that
he's playing to the great and washed, then he knows how to do it.
Yeah, he's just a guy out there just sort of.
He's the Larry the Cable Guy of the talk show.
He's not even really. Damn. I wasn't even going to say that. I was just going to say he's sort of the Morton Downey Jr. of a latter era. I mean, that
but
really...
But he doesn't smoke, so it doesn't count.
Man, Morton Downey Jr., boy, I miss that guy. Because he's dead, right? He had cancer?
Yeah, from smoking.
Yeah, because he came onto the stage every day to... Let me tell you a few things about whatever. I haven't thought about Morton Downey Jr. forever, but you know what? I would bet if you went back and watched the Morton Downey Jr. show now, I would bet it would seem pretty tame. I would bet that it probably doesn't seem that outrageous these days. Anyway, my point is, on television, Bill O'Reilly, in terms of sheer entertainment value, for what that guy does, I mean, he's among the best that there is right now. He's really among the very best broadcasters in the world on television. I mean, you can't view him as a source of news. You can't view him as a source of fact. You can't view him as... If you get your information from Bill O'Reilly... I mean, really, you're like clinically retarded to the level that it's amazing you can even breathe. You ought to be put under some sort of physical restraint and then put in a small room with a window so we can study you. But, I mean, if you're just looking for sheer, absolute, off-the-charts, right-wing entertainment value, I mean, Bill O'Reilly's like, he's your best bet there. His radio show is unbelievably tedious because he only works on television. Bill O'Reilly on TV is great, not least of which because you expect at any moment that he's just going to go across the desk and just start beating whoever is across from him in the face. Like that time that he was on with Geraldo. And I swear to God, I expected them just to pull out pistols at 10 paces at some point. The reason why Bill O'Reilly is so great on TV is this, and don't get me wrong, I don't watch it because I just don't need the aggravation, and it's just one of those things where it just gets your pulse racing so much that you feel like you're going to have a stroke. So I don't watch Bill O'Reilly for the same reason I don't watch Bill Maher, because it just winds you up, and then you just want to go around and kick the family dog, and that's no good. But Bill O'Reilly is great on TV for the same reason that he is awful on the radio, because he does have a very strong visual presence, and he's a physically large man as well, and he comes across, he heats the lens, as they say. But you eliminate the visual, like if you just listened to the Bill O'Reilly show, or you tried to listen to that radio show of his, and it was just terrible. But on TV, I mean, that guy really is. He is straight out of the world of Howard Beale. He really is. Oh, by the way, Scotty, are you in the room?
Oh, I have a Morton Downey Jr. clip here.
Really?
With a dominatrix.
Okay. Scotty, I'm getting an email that says, tell Scotty to answer the goddamn telephone, says this email, because the guy who took the photograph of the kitchen van apparently was trying to get through to tell us where it was, but he claimed that there was no answer. Hmm. All right. Well, it's 503-733-2970. We'll see if we can get a call back from that guy. All right, here's Tim Riley with the... Is this Morton Downey Jr.?
Son? And the dominatrix.
Oh, excellent.
All right.
And she's a stripper for God. Kelly, let me tell you something, pal. If there's ever a milk strike, I'll know where to go.
That women who show their bodies and sell their bodies are not pigs, and I'm sick and tired of guys like you calling us bimbos.
Hey, sit down, you fat bitch.
Listen, you...
Sit up. Sit down. Just
the
a second. This
society.
Is the crap
it is
she's
the men
in.
That wants
dominant
sex.
Mystique.
The men want perversion.
Where she can beat the hell out of men.
I'd love
to try to beat me, honey.
Right,
I'd show
you
beat
how me,
to
honey.
That doesn't really see, and that only, again, that's a thing that works if you're watching it on TV. Listening to it now, you don't get the... you don't really get the thrust of how revolutionary that Morton Downey Jr. show is. Yeah. Do you remember where
everybody,
you were?
Oh, yeah, I was in L.A.
Describe, if you will, now, the first time you experienced the Morton Downey Jr. show on television.
Well, I heard about it at work, because everybody talked about it. Men, women, all age groups. It was on late night on Channel 7 in Los Angeles, because they wouldn't put it on any earlier.
And it was a syndicated show.
Yeah, it was a syndicated show. And what attracted people to it was, you know, Channel 7 in Los Angeles, which is fairly liberal, wouldn't put it on till after their regular late shows. So people staying up late to watch it, or they were taping it on their VCRs. So this is what everybody would talk about every morning at work, what Morton Downey Jr. did last night.
I remember it was one of those things that I discovered during the summer. And this was, and I think, I'm trying to remember what grade, but I was in school still. And I remember that this happened a lot. Like when you, I think especially before the age of the internet, when you, kids didn't communicate with each other online, and maybe there were friends that you only saw during the school year. So when school would let out in early June, there were friends you didn't see again until September. So there would be this phenomenon where over the course of a summer, you would find a program on television, and you kind of thought you were the only one who knew about it until you went back to school. And then suddenly you discover that everybody was watching Star Blazers. It wasn't just you. So I remember over the course of that summer, which would have been like 88 maybe, summer of 88, yeah. summer of 89.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I remember over the summer of 88 discovering the Morton Downey Jr. show, which was on late at night, and it was after Carson, because I was a big Carson fan. Even as a real young person, I was very into Johnny Carson because I recognized that he was among the very best, probably the best ever at what he did, and I loved Carson. And so I would be up late, and it was either right before or right after the Tonight Show they would play Morton Downey Jr., and it just... It blew me away because he had that whole shtick where he would run in past the bleachers and he would do high fives with the crowd and he would smoke on stage and he had that animated opening with the huge teeth. And he was sort of, I mean, again, like, you know, Morton Downey Jr. was sort of conservative in the same way that, because you know who both of these guys are, Bill O'Reilly and Morton Downey Jr. I mean, they really are both just the children of Ed Anger. That's the thing. They really, they are both guys. In fact, I would be stunned if both of those guys had not read the Ed Anger column and decided that that was what they were going to base their obviously inflated and cartoonish and fabricated personas on. And just seeing Morton Downey Jr., I remember him talking about, God, it must have been the Iranians at one point. I think it might have been during some standoff we were having with Iran about something. No, it was Libya. It was, we were having some standoff with Libya, with Muammar Gaddafi, and the Morton Downey Jr. standing on stage. And he says, and he's chain smoking, and he's got that that last angry man thing where his tie is loosened, his shirt cuffs are rolled up, and he's kind of sweating a little bit, and you know that the sweat was applied backstage. You know that it was like fake sweat. And so he's standing out there, and he's doing his whole, like, standing up for the little guy, people kind of shtick that Bill O'Reilly does now. And he says, you know what, and I've got the answer to this whole Libya situation. And, like, on, it's so beautiful. I mean, it's just, even now, it just... It's just, it's, you know, mwah. It's just beautiful. It's fantastic television. The guy, he says, I've got the answer to this whole Libyan situation. And on cue, this huge noose just drops out of the rafters, and he grabs the noose and waves it right into the right into the camera, right into the lens. And he's like, and we put Muammar Gaddafi's butt right here, you know, and it's just, and the crowd is just going crazy, and it's just a whole... audience of just tool users. You know, they're all just like Johnny Mouthbreather. And they're just, and of course, there I am too. I mean, it was fantastic television in its time, Morton Downey Jr. But you know what? He, like Bill O'Reilly, another guy, amazing on television, terrible on the radio. Did you ever hear Morton Downey Jr.'s radio show?
No.
Oh, God damn. It was awful. It was terrible. It was, I mean, it's not like I got to hear it all the time, but I've heard a bunch of old air checks of his, because Morton, and we're just doing now, we're venturing into, we got to have some alarm from we venture into radio nerd Craig Adams, Bruce Agler territory, but Morton Downey Jr., he was on, I believe, I think he was on WNBC. I think he was on one of the stations that later it became like a Howard. I think Howard ended up taking his slot because I think they were trying to roll out Morton Downey Jr. for a nationally syndicated radio show. And I think the story I have always heard is that they were trying to give Morton Downey Jr. a nationally syndicated radio show, but he wanted so much money, they turned him down and they gave the slot to Howard instead. Now, Howard doesn't tell it that way, and so who knows if it's true or not. But the story I've always heard is that they offered the syndication deal, like at WYSP in Philadelphia and all those places where Howard went, that they offered it to Morton Downey Jr. He wanted so much money, they said, no, but, you know, we have enough money to hire this Stern guy. And so that's where Stern got the syndication chance from.
As a matter of fact, Morton Downey Jr. started working in talk radio at KFBK in Sacramento in the 80s.
Okay. So it's all, yeah, it's just,
it kind of went full circle. He died in 2001.
Morton Downey Jr. did?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway. Oh, wait, here we go. This is, let's see. Okay, we got a Bill O'Reilly call and a call about the kissing van. All right. So welcome down to the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Now, can I say who you are?
You may.
All right, so this is our good friend Chris Sneathan, who writes for OregonLive.com and has joined us about the very, reported on the Joey Chestnut, hot dog eating champion. All right, so you're the one, you saw the kissing van, and you sent me this fantastic photograph of the van, which I guess formerly belonged to, or maybe it still belongs to Entercom, for kissing, which is now gone away, and you saw it for sale. Where was it?
It is in Selwood, down near 17th and Tacoma. I can't remember exactly. It's on some side street down there. I was working my night gig and just saw it in somebody's driveway across the street from a delivery I was making.
I wonder if they gave it away as like their last, you know, their last My Three Songs prize or something.
I wondered the same thing. I'm like, you know, because the station I think is it's not on the air anymore. I think you're right. They went Spanish, but strange things you see. I mean, usually, you know, like with the delivery company or something like that, when they go out of business, they'll at least paint the logo over in white. It wasn't even painted over, and the license plate still says Kissin.
That's fantastic. Was there a price or something listed, or?
I didn't get close enough to – it was a shady neighborhood, and I didn't want to be taking a picture of the
– That's fantastic. That's like if somebody sent me a photograph a while back, and we do not encourage this behavior. This is wrong. But somebody sent me a photograph the other day of the KXL vehicle, which this person had plastered with AM970 stickers and then photographed with their cell phone, which is great. Not great. It's wrong. It's bad. Don't do that.
Right.
Now, Scotty is typing on the screen, delivery night gig in Southeast can only mean drugs, Rick.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, that's fantastic. So we'll have somebody swing by and check it out, see how much we can, how much we could expect to pay for the Kissin. I mean, really, it's a buyer's market at this point for anything that has the Kissin brand attached to it.
So. I would guess.
All right, excellent. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, Chris Need, and read him, I think it's, what is his web address?
Oregon Live.
It was Oregon Live, and then search Sneathen, S-N-E-T-H-E-N.
Great writer.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey. This is Eric out in Forest Grove.
Hey.
A buddy of mine used to have a good friend that was a professor, I think it's Merrillhurst, but where Bill O'Reilly, he was a professor there, and he was, I guess, just hated. Just everybody thought he was just a dick.
Fantastic. Have you seen? There's old newscasts of him because he was a reporter in Portland at one point, wasn't he?
Yeah, a long time ago.
And he had like long hair.
Boston,
I mean, relatively
too.
Speaking, yeah, he was like kind of a long hair kind of guy.
Well, the one thing I heard about that kind of stuck in my mind about it was, I guess he would leave his paycheck around every once in a while. He would like leave it on the photocopier and
for everybody
like
to
that.
See.
Yeah, what an
ass. That's great.
Pure and simple.
I mean, in a way, I almost have to admire that, you know, because he's just such a mercenary dick, you know, that in a way you kind of gotta give it up to him, you know.
You know, he's like he'd be a great negotiator if you're like buying a house or something. You know, you could hire that guy. And, nope, take 20% off, and then we'll take it.
And then he'll break your legs with something. You know, the thing about Bill O'Reilly is that you just have to view him. You have to view him the way that you view that Trinity Broadcasting Network, you know, where you turn on and it's the old woman with the purple hair talking about how Jesus cured her scabies. You just have to view it as pure, retarded entertainment. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
All right, who's he going to froth at next? Thank you.
Thank
have a good
you,
one.
My friend. There you go. All right. Yeah. Another guy, though, just couldn't buy himself listeners on the radio. Just terrible. It's KCMD Portland, by the way. This is... we're going to talk to Steve Kastenbaum here just a moment. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Let's do one more here, and then we'll talk to Steve Kastenbaum.
All right. Well, I'm sure you're curious as to the latest activities of Taylor Swift.
Who?
Taylor Swift.
Who?
Taylor Swift. She's getting to know more about the headliner on the Bonfires and Amplifiers tour.
Can I tell you for a minute? I was obviously doing a little shtick there when I kept saying who,
yes.
But actually, I didn't know who you were talking about. I thought you were talking about Taylor Hicks.
No.
Ah, Taylor Swift.
This is the 17-year-old singer-songwriter.
Oh, that girl I stalked in the bathroom.
Yep.
Yeah.
She says she's developing a great deal of respect for the star performer.
He, to me, is one of the coolest guys in country music, one of the best writers. And for him, you know, he's very steady and constant and always puts out good music. I love that. And he's apparently got an amazing sense of humor, which I respect.
She takes a lot of chances in her interviews. She really lays out the unvarnished truth. Who is she talking about?
Somebody. Somebody's on the tour with her. Brad Paisley.
What kind of country star is named Paisley? Seriously, that's got to be his real name, because no marketing department, no A&R man would ever give a country singer the last name of Paisley.
That's the guy who married...
Well, I'm going to miss her.
He married the girl from Father of the Bride. The daughter.
The daughter? Really?
Mm-hmm.
She's hot.
Yeah.
Good for you, Brad Paisley. No, the only thing I know about Brad Paisley is he has a terrible name, and he sings that fishing song, it's called. Yeah, well, I have this theory, and I don't think it's a theory so much as it's a fact that I'm just noting here, that all country songs, I mean, I've noted this before. The country songs are all based on the turn of a phrase or a play on words. And that's not a new phenomenon.
Or mama.
Or ma. You suddenly become David Allan Coe. Or trains. Or trucks. Or prison.
Broken Promise Lands.
Like that, there's that song, A Ring Where a Ring Used to Be. You know, it's like just play. I really do admire it. Just because, it takes skill to write songs like that. But I do have this theory that when country songwriters, who, again, you know, they are very mercenary. Guys just wake up and they sit in the room all day with their writing partner, and they just try to crank out hits. Which is, and I've said it a million times, I would love to do that for a living. I wish I could. If I could trade in this career right now for anything, it would be for that. But when they run out of interesting ideas for songs, I do have this theory that they just go to, they go to a store and they look at bumper stickers that are selling, and they just, off a bumper sticker, they will pull the phrase and they'll make a song out of it. Like, you come, pick a cliched phrase or saying of the last 5 years, and I'll guarantee you it's been turned into a country song. Like, been there, done that, I'll guarantee you there's a country song called that. Or, Let's Roll, there is, actually. I'll guarantee you there's a country song called At the End of the Day, because that's a cliched saying that has come into prominence in the last few years. But there is that bumper sticker that you see in a lot of, like, working man trucks, and it says, like, and the bumper sticker always says something like, well, my wife said to either quit fishing or she was going to leave me. Man, I'll miss her. And so there is a Brad Paisley song in which the verses are all about how, blah, 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 my wife said to quit fishing, and, you know, she's going to leave me. And then the chorus is, I'm going to miss her. It's taken off a goddamn bumper sticker. And
that's too bad.
You don't care at all. You're just pretending. Don't patronize me, Tim Riley.
No, we're all very concerned.
Let's work it out. From New York, you sons of bitches. Let's work on another recovery show. Steve Kastenbaum, hello, sir.
Having a good Friday.
It's a fantastic day. It really is. How are you, my friend? Hey, let me apologize up front here. Yesterday was a little bit of a challenging day in terms of our scheduled live shots with some of the CNN folks, and it was probably our fault that wires got crossed, and I know you ended up calling in around 2:30, and we weren't able to get to you, and that was probably a miscommunication between us and the folks above you there, so I apologize for that.
No worries, it happened.
All right. Hey, so what are the Chinese trying to kill us with today?
Lead paint in your Fisher-Price preschool toys, of course.
Of course, because now they're going after the children now.
Yes.
And so what, they're recalling 900,000 I didn't even know they made lead paint anymore. I thought that's like asbestos. It's like something they quit.
I'm wondering if it's like paint that had been sitting around in the warehouse for like decades, and they said, hey, we could use this red stuff, you know? but it's really crazy. It's like close to a million little pieces of plastic toys were made up in some factory in China, and then Fisher-Price somehow found out that some of them contained some small amounts of lead paint. So they immediately issued this recall for all these Sesame Street and Nickelodeon characters that were sold between May 1st and August 1st. And when you call the hotline for Fisher-Price, this woman comes on in a really pleasant voice and saying, you know, we're voluntarily recalling these toys because they may contain some lead paint. And she sounds so happy when she's saying it. It's really weird.
And then this has just been handed to me by the news department. Thousands of dolls and hundreds of children's pillows are being recalled because of a choking hazard. The, of course, Chinese-made fairy dolls that were accessories to the unicorn animal sleeping bag apparently have a bunch of small pieces that your kids could choke on.
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, China's gross domestic product is expanding at an incredible rate, 10% a year. That's really
insane.
Unprecedented. That's insane. So as a result, literally these factories are opening up all over the country that the government doesn't even know about. I mean, sometimes literally a local region will approve a coal-burning generator, and it'll go up and be constructed within a short period of time and be online, and people in the federal government there won't even know that it's there until it's already operating. So that's how fast things are happening there in China. So when the economy is growing that fast, you know, there's very little oversight because First of all, they don't know where everything is going on. But second of all, they just don't, you know, have the manpower in place yet for this sort of thing. So I was talking to a professor of international business at Hofstra University, and he just happened to be in China a couple of weeks ago on sort of a fact-finding mission.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that, you know, this sort of thing is going to happen, and you can't count on, you know, oversight at these Chinese factories right now. So part of the blame, part of the responsibility really does fall on the shoulders of these American corporations, and shame on them for not keeping a closer watch on the manufacturing process when they know what's going on at these factories.
All right, and then this is the other story, and I can't believe this to be true, but apparently it is. It's from WABC. Did they catch some guys off of Brooklyn in a homemade submarine?
You know, I live in Brooklyn, and all sorts of interesting characters live there. I'm a lifelong native Brooklynite, so I'm sort of proud of these folks, these people with their crazy idiosyncrasies. But these guys, they baffle me. They for some reason, made a homemade replica of an 18th century Revolutionary War-era submersible. It really looks like a floating coffin, if you ask me. I mean, you get in this thing, and you're probably going to die at some point. But they towed it out into the water off of Red Hook. And by the way, this thing has no means of propulsion. And the genius.
So it was just not so much a submarine as just a big floaty thing.
Yeah, and it had some oxygen tanks in it, so I guess in case he did, you know, submerge, he could breathe for a while. But there was a guy in it, and it started floating right near the Queen Mary II, which is one of the biggest cruise ships in the world.
That thing's got propellers like the size of a house.
Yeah, and there's a huge security zone around this cruise ship whenever it docks at this new passenger terminal in Brooklyn. So the second they see this thing bobbing up and down in the water near the bow of the Queen Mary II, the police boats were, like, on it like hawks, you know, and like vultures on roadkill. And they bring these guys to shore, and they're like, what the heck are you doing? So they didn't apparently pose any sort of threat. They weren't terrorists or whatnot, but they're still being charged with violating the security zone of this massive cruise ship, and their vehicle, I think, has been impounded for the time being.
Vehicle, that's sort of a generous description. That's like that sequence in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when the cop pulls John Candy and Steve Martin over, and he's, your car has no front lights, no rear lights, no speedometer, no seat belts. Do you feel this vehicle is safe to drive? And, you know, I mean, you do have to almost admire the moxie of just some guys basically lashing some crap inside a barrel and getting ready to just sail down the river. I mean, it is kind of impressive in a sort of Darwin Award kind of way.
It's really funny because that whole area in Red Hook, this area in Brooklyn, is full of these old warehouses that a lot of creative people have taken over and rent out the space. So you've got a lot of artists, you've got a lot of woodworking studios, that sort of thing. So who knows where these guys came from, if they were just a bunch of, you know, yahoos who were out there saying, hey, you know what would be cool? If we recreated that Revolutionary War-era submarine, just put it out in the Hudson.
Let's see. We actually have a guy who has a question for you about the toy recall. Hold on a second here. This is, let's see, Steve on line one. You're on with Steve Castabon. Hello.
Hello, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I have a 2.5-year-old that has those toys. Is there a place where we can turn them? Do you just take them back to where you purchased them, or is there somewhere where we take them back?
Fisher-Price on their hotline says you can bring them back to the store where you purchased them, but they also, if you go on their website, if you go on fisherprice.com, there's some additional information there as well. I believe you can also return it to the company. And again, what they're saying is they only found this lead paint in a few pieces, but they're recalling the entire run from this production between stores between May and August. So definitely don't let your children play with these, just to make it safe.
Right,
you know,
so
you don't want them in the hands of your kids.
So there you go, Steve in Portland. And the by the way, the number for this is, wait, I have the phone number. The number for this is 866-531-6199. 866-531-6199. Nine, I guess, is the number for that. All right, my friend. Hey, by the way, just, and this is the last day, because I know that probably it's a thing that appeals to just like nine of us in the world, but I am within about 40 pages of finishing The Bronx is Burning. And I wanted to ask you a question. I know you were young and probably not living in the right area to be affected by this, although I don't remember for sure. Did you have much recollection of the Son of Sam killings and the sort of fear? Because I have just finished the section of the book where they have apprehended David Berkowitz and they brought him in and, you know, the whole circus atmosphere that ensued.
Oh,
that was,
yeah.
You know, what was the I mean, it's a dumb question, but I mean, what was the vibe like? What was the sense when all that was going on?
It was crazy. My aunt was at that age where she was dating. You know, she was around 20 or so at the time. So, you know, I remember the family telling her, you know, she couldn't go out at night, you know, to be very careful, to only be in areas where there are lots of people around, to never pull over in a parked car. I mean, that was one of the things that happened. Like, I remember them doing stories in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, because there was an avenue there that had a lot of bars and nightlife going on, and, mm-hmm. and the bars were just empty. Whenever another murder would take place for a week or two, there would be absolutely nothing going on. You know, these sort of places that were sort of immortalized in the movie Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
You know, there were these discotheques and stuff like that in that area of Brooklyn, and they used to be packed, and then the Son of Sam was going on, and they would be dead empty.
The book talks about that place, the Enchanted Garden, which I think was the other place that Steve Rubell and Ian Schrager owned.
Right.
And how it held, whatever, like 1,000 people or something, and you go there when the Son of Sam thing was going on, be like 12 people inside.
Right. You could hear the crickets. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just insane. I think we've got one other recall question for you here. This is Jennifer. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show, Jennifer.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Steve. Hey, you know, I've got a 2-year-old that has these toys also. And what is the determining factor of, like, so May 1st, how do they determine that? How do I know it's not some toy that I bought before that? I mean, what are they doing to test for these? Is there something I can do to test that my toy, you know, how can I trust that this is it's May 1st through August 1st?
Feed them to a neighbor's child.
Yeah, give it to another kid. They know that these particular, these figures and the tracks that they play on, that they were manufactured at a specific time at a certain manufacturing plant in China, and they can trace through the numbers, through the serial numbers on these toys, when they were distributed to the stores. So they know without any doubt when they started hitting these stores. So they may not even have gotten on the shelves of the stores by May 1st, but they were delivered as early as May 1st. So that's why the recall starts on May 1st. And up until August 1st.
All right, there you go. And you can also, thank you, Jennifer, and you can go to FisherPrice.com, and there's the phone number and a whole message and everything there, too. So, all right, my friend, big plans for the weekend?
Yeah, going to the beach.
Excellent. Well, good for you. Well, enjoy your time outdoors. Rest up. We will talk to you in the immediate future. Enjoy your weekend, my friend.
Thank you so much.
All right, there you go. Steve Kastenbaum, ladies and gentlemen, from the city that never sleeps, New York. Fantastic. And so I'm unclear about this now. So does the... So you said, because I haven't watched it, I haven't set the TiVo for anything. Are you saying that Bronx is Burning starts next week, or is it like a one installment per week
thing? It didn't mention anything about installments, but then again, I couldn't really hear the audio very well, but it said it was next Tuesday at 10 on ESPN.
Maybe they might be doing one episode a week or something, because it's an 8-part miniseries. You know, you can just email me. If you know that, you don't have to call. You can just email it to me, because I deliberately have not taped it, because I want to finish the book before I watch it, but... Anyway, so yeah, but if anybody out there is interested in New York culture at all, especially during that summer, it's a pretty amazing book, The Bronx is Burning. All right. We're going to break. We'll come back with Tim Riley at the bottom of the hour. He's got news for us. We will do the... listen to that. You know, she looked hot in this video, too.
No, she doesn't.
Short blonde hair, that tight, stripy
huge
shirt.
Brows.
Well... I agree with the, never mind. She's going to say huge, huge something else. She's got the tightest shirt in this video. This is where she's wearing the stripy gray and brown shirt.
Yeah, she's wearing a striped shirt, but it's
gray
not very
and,
tight. You just made it tighter in
gray
your mind,
and black. In my mind, it's tighter. And she's got the short, blonde, spiky hair, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's a slut, because she's, you know, she's knocked up, so you know she's easy. That's hot. All right. And then Danny Aiello is her dad in this video. He's like the big, beefy, Italian Catholic dad. All right. What are we doing? Oh, we're taking a break. We'll come back. Tim Riley, the bottom of the hour. Top 560 slow dance songs coming up. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. What else? We might revisit this business of the second worst story you've ever heard. And so forth. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. All Madonna bumper music all day. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
Ever, and I know you love this movie.
I know, I do. I love this movie. Actually.
That's why I did it coming back instead of going into a break.
Nickname is All the Way May.
Okay, now I need to go buy the CD Game Exchange.
This movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bill Pullman's in this movie.
Is he somebody's? He's Gina Davis's husband, isn't he?
Sure is.
Yeah. And then who's the one who dies and then the fat kid shows up? Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure shows up? Well, Mom passed away a couple years ago.
Oh, the blonde lady.
I'm still fat. Whatever it is, that guy. Because he's the irritating kid.
You've talked about how touching this movie is and now you're
making fun of it. I am making fun, but it's still a great movie. And this movie generated...
Oh, Stewart or something?
Whatever. I don't know, but he's Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Francis! He's that guy. Oh, you'll be sorry, Pee-wee Herman. Him, he's in this movie. And I'm not making fun of the movie. This movie gave us one of the all-time great quotes. A quote which has myriad uses. Which
I know what it is.
There's no crying in baseball, which we use all the time. That's a thing that... That's like a slogan that Susan Reynolds and I have used repeatedly up there. When, you know, something will go wrong. We're facing some challenge or whatever. There's no crying in radio. The other great thing is Lovitz. John Lovitz in this movie is fantastic. He only has that little sequence at the beginning. I'm making $100 a week now. Well then, this would be more, wouldn't it? Scotty's all angry. Why aren't you using the songs I gave you? What was the point of me making a Madonna file? Let's listen to... Can we just go to this for a second? Let me go to Scotty here. Let's see. What did Scotty give us? Here's a Scotty song. Is this Act of Contrition? See... This is a song simply put there to annoy the Pope. No. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth.
He did give us Hanky Panky, though.
Tim Riley.
A giant wind turbine is on display downtown. Yes, it's a giant turbine on display at Southwest First between Salmon and Taylor. That's the location of the PGE offices. And if you hurry, until 2 o'clock, you'll be allowed to write messages on the turbine blade.
I swear to God, for a minute, I thought you were going to be allowed to ride the turbine.
That'd be fun.
Would you be fantastic?
That'd be
just
great.
Just a bunch of children strapped to the blades before they turn it on.
Mm-hmm. This turbine was made in China. or if you can go tomorrow from 10 to 2 and see the turbine some more.
Hooray.
It's from PGE.
I don't even know what
it's
a turbine
is. It's like a propeller.
Okay.
It's designed to... Well, make your bill higher, as everything else does. Suspect, that crazy guy who burned himself to a crisp, tried to drive that car bomb into the Glasgow airport. He finally died of his injuries. He was in the Jeep Cherokee that plowed into the terminal back on June 30th. After two Mercedes cars were packed with gas canisters were discovered in central London. This was an Indian engineer. He set himself on fire and struggled with police and passersby, tried to put out the flames. He was burned... Up to 90% of his body, so just a matter of time. A Florida woman has been arrested on charges of drunk driving a second time, taken into custody wearing a T-shirt that reads, "I'm not an alcoholic, I'm a drunk."
Excellent. Well, it saves the DA some work there.
Under arrest is 41-year-old Amanda Lynn Bailey. She's charged with driving under the influence, driving with a canceled, suspended, or revoked license.
Police did not capture any T-shirt messages during her April arrest. And she can't be... There's a picture of her in the paper, too.
Let me see.
She kind of looks like that woman from the methamphetamine trailer yesterday.
She does. I mean, I can't really tell from this.
Same gene pool.
This is that woman's younger daughter, probably. That horrible photo we had of the weird androgynous, and by androgynous, I mean she just looks like some guy who's a janitor.
Mm.
This would be like that woman's younger daughter, who is sort of sluttily hot for about 3 days when she's like 19. That's it, though. Excellent. Wonderful.
Mark Patterson kicked, choked, and wrestled a cougar to rescue a 12-year-old boy from the jaws of the big cat at a resort camp in South Central British Columbia. His quick action is credited with saving Colton Reeb, who was on a camping trip northwest of Kamloops when he was attacked by a mountain lion. The cougar pounced on Reeb while he was walking to a bathroom close to Vacation Village. Patterson, who owns a lodge, jumped in to rescue the 12-year-old boy. The cat had Colton's head in its mouth. Blood was squirting everywhere. Patterson used 5 soccer kicks to the cat's head.
Fantastic.
So then he finally put a chokehold on the cougar and squeezed it as hard as he could and finally let the boy's head go.
Any story that contains the phrase blood was spurting anywhere or everywhere. Let's see, we got this. Rick, these are people sending us Madonna emails. Rick, you got it mostly right about Like a Prayer. It was Pepsi who hired Madonna. The video aired at exactly once, and Madonna walked away with $5 million. Also, the Like a Prayer album came out in 89. When asked what she learned about being involved in commercial endorsements after the whole debacle went down, Madonna said, "I didn't learn anything, but I bet companies will think twice when hiring me." All right, fantastic. Well done. Oh, by the way, in case you need something to complete your collection of now pointless Kissin' items, somebody sent me this listing. Somebody is selling Kissin' radio jackets on Craigslist. The ad reads, "For sale, 2 different Kissin' radio jackets. One with original logo, in good condition. I worked there from 90 to 96. Want to get rid of them. One is red and blue, one is red and black. Cash only." So there you go. All right, here's Tim Riley.
It's a girl, again, for Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar, as the Fort Worth couple welcomes their 17th child. She was born at St. Mary's Hospital. Jennifer weighs 8 pounds, 8 ounces. The Duggars have been featured on several television programs. The next special, the Duggar Family Album, is scheduled for next month. Among the fun facts are listed at Discovery Health's website, devoted to the Duggars, a baby has been born in every month except June. The Duggars have gone through an estimated 90,000 diapers, and Michelle, who's 40, has been pregnant for 126 months, or 10.5 years of her life. The family includes 2 sets of twins.
Imagine being pregnant for 10 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and all these children are homeschooled.
All right. Okay.
They love the daughters, too. They love ruffles and lace. The oldest is 19. The youngest is almost 2, so it was time for another.
Now, is she another one of these idiot hicks that's on...
grateful to God for another gift from him.
Is she packing herself full of fertility drugs?
I'm looking here.
Or is this... I guess that's not probably the case, because that's usually when octuplets.
They don't believe in birth control.
They do it the Lord's way.
Yes, missionary. Jennifer Unenjoyable.
Through sheet.
Jennifer joins Joshua, John David, Jana, Jill, Jessica, Jinger. Joseph, Josiah, Joy Anna, Jedidia, Jeremiah, Jason, James, Justin, Jackson, Johanna, and that's it for now.
Jinger, please. All right. I don't even know what to say about that. Is she hot at least? She can't be. There's no way. Not at this point. I was going to say, that's got to be like one big fleshy mudslide underneath
her. I'm sure she's hot temperature-wise.
Yes. All right. There you go.
I don't see her picture, but it'll be found just about anywhere.
Oh, God. Well, you can just see the back of her head.
Is that enough?
Well, never mind.
apparently, it's enough for someone.
that's
all he wants.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
After the 16th kid, the back of the head was plenty to see.
My thoughts exactly. I'm so glad the news department said that so I didn't have to. Yes, I think somewhere around child number 9, Sarah, the back of the head becomes the perverted view. That's all I'm really, seriously.
You can't say that.
Sexy. Oh, Jesus. I wonder if he, like, lashes himself to something stable in the bedroom before sex.
Is that why all those pit girls start getting, like, lady mullets when they get older?
What do you mean, lady mullets?
No, where they're very short in the front. All they have to worry about is, like, poofing it up in the back.
Well, that's my thing is, I mean, look, I wonder this, actually. Why do birds suddenly appear every time that you're near?
No.
Why is it that old women always have short hair? Now, is that because your hair, like women's hair, thins as they get older? Is that why that is? Or does it become your hair becomes brittle and it just sort of snaps off? You get like a lot of split ends or whatever. Because you never see like this will just go with all the Madonna music. I'll just continue making gay sounding observations. I remember when I saw Titanic, and when Gloria Stewart, whatever her name is, put her hair down at the end. You know, the old Rose. When she put her hair down at the end and she's standing on the rail of the Titanic and she drops the heart of the sea or whatever it is into the back into the ocean, I remember being sort of, you know, surprised that as an old woman she had long hair. Because you never see old women with long hair. It's always that one short, curly hairdo. And I just don't know why that happens. If that is like a physical thing where older women simply their hair does not stay long because the hair is just too brittle. Or if it's just like, you know, if it's just sort of a who am I looking good for kind of a thing. And so that's why they get the shorter. Because you know what I'm talking about.
Maybe it just gets too thin.
Maybe. It's like every old female relative you know has the one hairdo. It's like they just go through some Jetsons-style dressing machine. It goes chunk, and it just gives them that one hairdo. It's all very interesting. All right. Let's see here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show, sir or madam, as the case may be.
Hey. I was watching a Discovery Channel on that family with the 22 children. She described her kids like flowers. You can never have too many.
Really? Did she actually say that?
She said, my children are like flowers. You can't have too many.
Okay, that's...
And here's the craziest part of the whole family. They built a huge house, and how many bedrooms for 19 people?
I don't know.
Three. Parents, girls, boys.
Yeah, there's going to be a whole lot of court cases in the future for this family. You just know that it's the case. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. All you need is one bad apple in that barrel. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Hi.
Hi, this is Philip.
Hi, Philip.
I also saw those people, and basically the kids look like little slaves. You know, the mom just runs them around doing all the chores all day long.
Lashed into a galley with oars in their hands. I understand the notion of having children to do all the work around the house. I mean, I guess that's not really motivation enough for me to do it, but I sort of understand that. And sometimes, I know parents where it's like sometimes you'll have one kid that you can tell just from the get-go is going to be real messy, just going to be a little hoodlum. And so you have another kid hoping that the law of averages will kick in and the second kid will be tidy enough to clean up after the first one. That's what my sister did. My sister had her firstborn, her son, is just a little slob, or was anyway. And so she had a second kid, and then the second kid was real tidy and cleaned up after the older one. And so, but usually, you know, usually you'll get sort of a mixed bag, but I mean, goddamn, all you need is for, I mean, at 17 kids, then you start thinking about the law of averages, like how one in nine children ends up going to prison in this country, and like one in 12 children ends up, like, I don't know, chainsawing somebody's head off at some point. You got a house of 17 kids. That's a whole lot of statistical anomalies just waiting to happen.
Yeah, these guys are very religious, and the father is some kind of a politician.
Yeah, of course. All right, thank you, sir.
Can I also hit on the Chinese import stuff?
Oh, why not?
I was watching Dateline NBC last Sunday, and it was to do with fake drugs. The Chinese, the Russians, Mexicans, Colombia are making Aricept, Viagra, and they're putting them in all these little dumpy places, you know. But the ones in China, they, you know, the Chris Hansen guy, he followed them to China, and they're making drugs right there in like these little tumblers. They're putting the coating on, and they were using yellow road paint for actual color.
Really?
Yeah, and the actual content of the drug. Some of them had the real drug in it, but most of them were made basically of gypsum, which is drywall.
Or just like dirt that they found out back.
And then they're shipping them to this country with a Made in USA sticker on the box.
Excellent. Fantastic. All right, there you go. Thank you, my friend. That's Philip. There you go. I like China and dumpy places like that. Well, that's like when you get you'll see those ads on the internets about, like, you know, would you like to buy, and then, you know, they'll list, like, you know, Claritin or whatever the hell the drug is, you know, like, you know, a box of 1,000 for $9. And you sort of think about it for just a second, like, well, that does seem like a bargain. But then you realize
that, I mean, really, that's just some guy going up back and just scooping up big piles of sawdust and putting them into, you know, putting them into a series of capsules and so forth. Rick, you can totally tell what year that Morton Downey Jr. show aired by the noise the crowd makes when the guy says something like, sit down, you bitch. I can totally picture the mullet heads giving the fist pump, Arsenio style. I was sitting here at my desk, and I almost yelled, who let the dogs out when I heard that? Ah, the golden era of television. And the thing about the Morton Downey Jr. show is that it really was like the flame that burned brightly and then went out. I mean, it was huge, and then it just vanished. I would
for like
guess,
a year.
Yeah, I mean, I would guess.
And then a year later, he was claiming he was getting his forehead painted by Nazis.
I remember that.
Remember that?
Except it was backward, right?
Yeah, it was backward because he did it himself in the mirror.
He just This is one of those slices of American culture that you guys have to admit. It's like one of those things where if you are out of the country for about 6 months, you won't know what we're talking about. There are certain sort of pop culture references that really, like, if you were taking an extended tour of Belize or something and you weren't around, and then somebody chooses to make a Dwayne Wayne joke, like, you'll have no idea what we're talking about. So it is with Morton Downey Jr. and the backward swastika. And so he, because I think his show was only on the air for like 18 months, something like that, because it wasn't a network show, it was flat out syndicated, like by some sub-King World type company. So his show had gone on the air. Everybody'd sort of been interested in it, and then it sort of, you know, kind of faded away. In America had started to sort of lose interest. And so then, and this was, I think, around the same time as the Geraldo nose-breaking incident with chair being thrown on television with the neo-Nazis.
Mm-hmm. That was terrific.
Which was fantastic. Really, it's one of the towering moments of American television, and I mean that sincerely. Because that was around the same time that that Geraldo did that whole program, that two-hour investigation of Satanism, where he was wearing that purple shirt for some reason. I remember that. So Morton Downey Jr. was starting to, he was being overshadowed by other people, not unlike A Current Affair, which spawned a host of imitators, which then surpassed the original in terms of popularity and reach. So Morton Downey Jr. decides to get himself back in the news by saying that he was beaten up in an airport bathroom by a bunch of neo-Nazis, which doesn't make any sense when you consider that, I mean, Morton Downey Jr. was sort of like to the far right of Pat Buchanan. I mean, it just made no sense at all. Especially when they then examined him and they saw that the swastika was backward on his forehead because he'd done it into a mirror, which is just wonderful. I mean, it's just, it just warms my heart just thinking about it. God damn,
but it was a period of time when you just couldn't get hurt bad enough on a stage during a talk show.
Where is Geraldo right now? What is he doing? Because he lost that gig that he had, the Rivera Live thing went away, and then he was on Fox for a while. I guess he's a guest commentator now. Because that's when that thing happened with him and O'Reilly a few months ago about the illegal aliens and the so forth and the whatnot.
Well, that was kind of interesting, but you could tell that was staged, too.
Yeah, but I don't care. You know what I mean?
I want the real thing.
I just don't. Geraldo is just, he is so, his jersey has just been in the rafters for so long in my world. It's like he has nothing left to prove. That guy, people don't realize how groundbreaking Geraldo Rivera really has been. And, you know, here's the other thing people don't remember. People don't really have any recognition of the fact that he was a serious journalist for a long time.
Yeah, when he was back on ABC.
He broke that Willowbrook scandal, which is way back when he was on, like, 2020 and so forth. All right. In any event. What are we doing? Oh, hey, hi. We'll continue with all the merriment here in a moment. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from our sister station, Rock 101, KUFO. Court and Fatboy here at 7 to midnight, Monday through Friday.
We are not merriment. Is that what you're saying?
You'll
continue with the merriment after this garbage is done. Is that what you're saying?
No, you guys are shameless whoring.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's better than my joke. Well done.
I smile and nod because it's all true. Every interpretation.
Do ye have Morton Downey Jr. memories to share with us?
I do. I remember staying up late and watching Morton Downey on my, it was probably a 20-inch black and white nightly. I loved that guy.
Have you guys mentioned the chest bump yet?
No.
He was like the first host I've ever seen, actually. And it was with a woman. It was like a fat woman.
Oh, and he just played that clip.
Yeah, and he's actually
that
chest bumping.
That was with the dominatrix.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Just, yeah, shoving her with his body, with his torso, the length of the stage.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and calling her like a fat bitch the whole way back to her seat. You sit down, and just kind of wobbling into her like kind of drunken smoky weeble.
Okay. He was really fantastic. He was just amazingly great. And you're talking about, here's how trashy I was. I also had the tiny black and white television on which I watched it, and I was like, I must have been like maybe 13, 14, that. And I had, of course, there was no remote control for that small black and white television, and it had the big,
you know, the chunky dial that you had to chink, chink, chink that you had to turn. And I didn't want to get up off my bed to change the dial. And so I had a yardstick.
Oh, Jesus.
And I had, no, seriously, here's what I had done. This is totally true. I had just cut a notch in the end of the yardstick. I would just take the yardstick and I would go, chink, and the notch fit right over the little slanty part of the dial. And I could actually turn the television channel that way.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
How are you not my size? Even I knew to get up off the couch every once in a
while.
While
eating a plate of fish sticks.
Yeah, yeah, right. It's like that episode of The Simpsons where if you're too fat, mash pad here, something like
yeah,
that.
Right, yes.
Yeah. He's got his back scratching stick.
A rag on a stick.
Yeah. Wonderful. The one thing I remember about Morton Downey Jr. is the first person I ever saw on TV with gray gums. His gums were gray.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, the smoke?
Yeah, yeah, the way he chain smoked. Yeah,
yeah, they were flat out gray. It kind of freaked me out.
And he had weird little warty growths
on
his neck.
I always thought he would have made like a really good Batman villain.
Oh, I could totally see that. Yeah, the smoker.
Yeah.
The whatever.
Yeah, like he shoots plumes of carcinogens out from his hands or something and screams as he runs off into the distance with some poor infant somewhere.
Fantastic.
Does he have lung cancer? Has that been announced?
No, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead. Oh, he's dead a long time.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, of cancer, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
So,
right. I mean, but you know, that's how that guy's supposed to go.
Sure, yeah. Yes.
Morton Downey Jr. is not meant to. He is a shooting star that is not meant to last.
Shooting star made of phlegm and anger.
Blah, 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 blah.
The pimping.
So yeah, the shameless
pimping. Oh, yeah, you're doing a thing tonight.
Yes, tonight, Baghdad Theater, we have Pulp Fiction going on. 11 mm-hmm. o'clock. $3 to get in. If you get there early, we're gonna have Guitar Hero going for the people in line, so you can maybe earn your way in by 5-starring whatever, you know, Ace of Spades or whatever.
Excellent, fantastic.
So, yeah.
And so I heard you. We haven't done High Concept Friday yet today. I don't really have a sounder. We were gonna start doing a sounder for like a speed bonus round or something, and it was just gonna be like 9 minutes of High Concept Radio, and it was gonna be like the NYSE, how there's like an opening bell and a closing bell at the stock market, and it was gonna open and close the High Concept section.
Okay.
I don't really know if I'm gonna do that today, but if I did, here's what the subject would be.
Okay.
I heard you make the following observation. I think it was last night.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I don't have that. I have this. CMT celebrity cow riding cowbell that came in the mail. There you go.
Oh, good.
Well,
that came in the mail today.
That just screams High Concept.
But you guys were talking about the holy trinity of badass cinema.
Yes, cinema.
All right, and so you see if I can remember correctly, because Fatboy, you had said that the three films that define badass cinema were Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Reservoir Dogs.
Was it Reservoir Dogs?
No, it was Wild Bunch.
Oh, the Wild Bunch.
Yeah, it was Wild Bunch, Pulp Fiction, and I don't remember what the third was right now.
Magnificent Seven or something?
No, I don't think it was that. I don't remember what the third was. You can download the podcast at CortonFatboy.com if you want to refresh your memory.
I was listening to it live. I can't remember even what you said, though. But you had three movies that were your holy trinity of not so much good, but badass.
Yeah,
badass.
Which are two
men different
cinema,
things. Yeah, badass guy cinema. And it was Pulp Fiction. What was the other one? Pulp Fiction,
The Wild Bunch.
It was another ultra-violent kind of man thing.
God damn it, that's going to bug me now.
And I swapped out Wild Bunch for something like Snatch or...
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Yeah, right. And I think somebody suggested Die Hard as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, now it's going to irritate me that I can't remember what your third choice even was.
It irritates you. I'm the one that said it. I got paid money to say that thing out loud, and I can't remember it now.
Was it Usual Suspects?
It might have been.
Nah, I don't think it was. Hmm. Well, whatever. Anyway, but one of those movies, Pulp Fiction, tonight, Baghdad.
Yes.
And it's like $3 and whatnot. And
11 o'clock is when it starts. Get there early because there will be a line.
What are your three?
Pulp Fiction.
For badass cinema?
Yes.
Yeah.
Badass guy cinema, Holy Trinity. I would say... God, I just don't know.
It has to be something where you pump your fist in the air.
Yeah,
from front to back.
Oh, was it Gladiator? Did I say Gladiator?
No, 300.
300.
Yes. Which I don't know.
I thought that was a replacement for you.
Oh, maybe it was.
Yeah, it was a replacement for you.
That was brought up.
But Gladiator, there's that one part where he's out there and he's decided that he's too good to be a gladiator, and he just wipes everybody out in like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And on the last one, he sticks two swords in the guy, steps back, walks back up, pulls the swords out, then beheads him, throws the swords on the ground, and then spits. I actually came up out of my seat when I watched that theatrically.
Yeah! Fantastic. All right, three films of badass cinema. I would say I would say probably, for me, I would say The Usual Suspects.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could go with Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Maybe Die Hard.
Yeah.
Maybe Die Hard, just, and that's either solely because of the sense of whimsy that it's got and because of McClane, yeah. You know, just the way that he is sketched as a character.
I would roll Die Hard just for Argyle.
Yeah. And the quarterback is totally all right. Oh, Goodfellas. Somebody has noted you
that's
said Goodfellas.
That's not what
Goodfellas.
Right.
Goodfellas. No,
okay.
No. I would go with you on that. Right, I would totally swap out Die Hard for Goodfellas.
All right,
and we're done.
You got to let go of the bell a little.
It's not really working.
No, but that's the national security alert, remember?
Is it?
Yes, it is.
It's a multi-purpose bell.
That goes back to 2001.
I forgot. I'm sorry.
No, that can't be associated with anything else but that.
I've made everybody panic now.
That goes back to
locking themselves in Fallout shelters.
That goes back to the third version of the show.
The hiding under tables from the bridges that are sure to fall on them.
It's hard to keep track of the various versions of this program.
This is the 2001 version.
All right. Okay, please to ignore that then. All right, Bag That Theater, Pulp Fiction tonight.
Yes.
And this is the first time it's been on the big screen since 94, probably.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I haven't seen it earlier.
Probably definitely in Portland. I don't remember any time that Pulp Fiction's been screened in 35mm here in Portland since 94. So.
I only saw it. I think once in the theater, or maybe twice, maybe.
I've seen it a number of times since, but the way to see this movie is on the
I've never screen. Seen it in the theater, so I honestly don't even care if
really?
Nobody shows up.
I've never,
well, it was 94. I wasn't that old.
How old were you in 94?
I don't know. 15, 16,
yeah, okay, that makes sense. I saw it the same weekend as Natural Born Killers. Because there was that big, well, because they opened it, that was the big story, because they were both written by Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
But he had washed his hands of Natural Born Killers at that point. And they opened on the same weekend. And I saw Natural Born Killers on a Friday, and I saw Pulp Fiction on Saturday.
Natural Born Killers has not aged
well. It's a terrible film. It was a terrible film at the time.
Right.
The only good thing, I mean, after the Dangerfield sequence, it just falls apart.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that movie just implodes after that.
But man, that man can play a pedophile, just a creepy, nasty, horrible person.
Why isn't that on his gravestone, I wonder.
I don't know, but he can do it.
Get it nice and soapy, and I'll come upstairs.
Yeah. Oh,
or whatever
God.
It is he says. Whatever that. Make sure you get it hot enough for me.
Oh.
Creepy.
And then it's Edie McClurg as the housewife. Oh, Ed. You know.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you
and
for letting us.
Ended on a child molesting joke. We'll
go to
break. All right.
I thought you know Court and Fatboy have been in the studio.
Court and Fatboy, 7 to midnight, Rock 101, KUFO, and broadcasting live tonight
from
Baghdad, where Pulp Fiction will be on this big screen for a mere $3.
And Emerson will be there, yes?
Dang, tell yourselves that. All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We come back in the next hour. More of Tim Riley, Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. We'll do the top 5 60s slow dance songs. And that's so great. Thank you.
And MTV is working on her 25th year in show business special.
Really?
Yeah. A 2-hour special for the 07-08 season. The tales are still being worked out. She will perform as well as some other artists covering her tunes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything you said after that line where she says, "Hit me like I'm a bad girl even when I've been good."
You're so creepy sometimes.
I have no shame. This was a big single. I'm entitled to like it. What movie is this from? Anybody know?
Dick Tracy.
Well done.
What was she, Breathless Mahoney?
Yes. All right, back after this is the Rick Emerson Show.
American Life all queued up, and instead of playing it, I closed it.
Now, this is Papa. This is Papa. Don't preach it.
I know.
I have something. You ready?
Do it.
Let me just, That's how I roll.
I have the soy latte wrap all queued up, too.
Oh, really? Thanks so much.
It'll happen next break.
It was either going to be this or Lucky Star. Boy, she hot. She was hot then, too. You know why? Because she was just a slut. You look at her, she's had that trashy Jersey mall girl thing going on. Is this the one? No, that's Cherish, where she's rolling around in the surf. True Blue, baby.
Oh.
This is sort of like...
I'm not very familiar with it.
Oh, this is like an 80s version of a 50s doo-wop song. Wait till we get to the hook here. Yeah, Cherish is the one where she's rolling around in the surf, I think. This is totally a doo-wop song, but it's... That's a great song. It's 503-733-2970. Now I can't remember. Was this the... Well, let's welcome Scott Daly to the show. We'll just use this. Hi, Scott. How are you doing today?
We get Scott Daly.
Well, yeah, I thought
Scott
we were going to play his intro.
Nah, we'll just use this.
Ah, Madonna's good enough. And if there is any Madonna to
I'm
use...
sorry, you bummed out? All right, thank you.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
What a beautiful TV.
Now, is this the...
That does not work. It's not plugged in anything.
Sorry.
Right now, it's just sort of an abstract art piece on the wall there. Yeah. Now, is this the song that MTV did the make your own video for this contest? Somebody will know. MTV, for some Madonna song, did a contest where people shot a video for this and then sent it in. And the prize was like $5,000, and then they showed your video on MTV.
You know,
and I think it was this one.
I think you're right.
And the winner was like some sepia-toned video, and I think it was like some girl who did it. But it was a cool, like, teenage love triangle video or whatever, and it was kind of shot in this cool, like, sort of beige toned.
I know the Vogue ship has already passed, but who directed
the
that video?
The Vogue ship has already passed.
Who directed
gay,
Vogue?
Gay. David Fincher.
Thank you.
David Fincher also. Okay.
Oh, come on. You're calling that gay? Listen to our show today.
All right, Mr. Smart Madonna Man.
Fabulously happy.
No. I'm not claiming to be a smart Madonna Man. Fincher did Vogue.
What was the other Madonna video directed by David Fincher?
Like a Prayer? I don't know this one.
Really? Oh, right.
Press yourself.
Yes. David Fincher did this, too.
That's right, he did.
David Fincher, who went on to do Zodiac,
yeah.
7, Fight Club, got his start directing... Oh, how great is this song? He directed this video as well, and you can tell that David Fincher directed this video because it looks exactly like the video for Jamie's Got a Gun by Aerosmith.
That's right. That's
where everything right. is... All the night sequences in this video are jet black with these big, bright beams of blue light beaming yeah. through, which is exactly what the Jamie's Got a Gun Aerosmith video looks
yeah,
like. And then this has got that... Isn't this the video that's got her in a pantsuit grabbing her crotch? And then, like, she does, like, a big crotch thrust with her hand, like a Jackson thing.
You don't need to demonstrate.
No, I'm just showing in case you don't know what
it is. We know what a crotch
what
grab
is. What did you say about Britney? Grabbing her region.
Playing with her region.
And then, is this the one, is this video where she is literally on her knees drinking a bowl of milk like a cat?
Yes, this is the one.
And then, like,
thank you, David Fincher, for
and
that.
Then, like, a big shiny black man picks up the bowl of cream and, like, pours it on himself.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just, like, so off the charts.
Do you need some alone time, Rick Emerson?
I'm just saying, look, there's no getting around the fact that, like, the best videos, came out of the 80s were made by, I mean, like, Michael Jackson, Phil Collins. People don't think about this, that Phil Collins and Genesis made fantastic videos.
Remember Land of Confusion and how just amazing that was to see it for the first time?
Aerosmith made great videos. Madonna made great videos. I mean, most of the videos in that time were just crap.
Yeah.
So the good ones really stand
they
out.
Really stand out, yeah.
I mean, like, even Prince's videos weren't all that great. All right. Hi there. We're men. Can you play the Pulp Fiction theme just so we can establish some manhood? Thank you. Yeah! Correctamundo. I like whiskey and bitches. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from FilmFeverRadio.com. Scott Daly. All right.
Hello there.
How are you going to see Pulp Fiction on the big screen tonight,
my friend?
I
sure am. All right. I will be there. I'm excited. I haven't seen that on the big screen.
So well, 13 geez. Years?
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be good times. I'm very excited.
And I don't think I saw it a second time, and I don't remember why.
Oh, I saw it like 5 times.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I did, but I remember, as I was saying earlier, I think I saw that, and I saw Natural Born Killers the same weekend. And I remember that Pulp Fiction, the one thing I remember about Pulp Fiction is just like everybody, that needle sequence.
Oh, man.
With Uma Thurman and Eric Stoltz, and just how the audience was, like, climbing the walls. I mean, because I'm not going to pretend to be cooler than I was. I never saw Reservoir Dogs in the theater. I saw Reservoir Dogs, in fact, I think after Pulp Fiction. But it's like that ear-cutting sequence in Reservoir Dogs, the first time you're just like, Jesus God! You know,
and don't show anything.
And you just, but you're still just like crawling out of your skin. That needle sequence in Pulp Fiction, I remember at the end of that, we felt like we had just been assaulted. At the end of that scene, we felt like Quentin Tarantino had climbed inside our heads and just brutalized us.
You know what made the ear scene in Reservoir Dogs so brutal was before Tarantino cut away, is Michael Madsen kind of putting his knee up on his chest.
Yeah, like for leverage.
Just get ready to start sawing. You're like, oh!
God damn. So, and, you know, it wasn't supposed to be Stuck in the Middle with You. I think it was supposed to be My Sharona by the Knack.
Yes, I remember that.
It's just freaky. All right.
Have we cleansed ourselves from Madonna talk here?
No, there's going to be more Madonna talk. It's all Madonna all day.
Fantastic.
I mean, and really, we can't continue to just like do this as a trend, but Dennis Miller has this great gimmick where he does each day it's a different artist. Like today was all David Bowie. Oh, so nice. We can't really continue to do that. But we made some comment earlier in the week about Madonna, so we wanted to do an all Madonna thing. We'll do these calls. We can do the top 5 60s slow dance songs to kind of round out the week. We've gone back by decade, starting with the 90s. So we'll do that. You have, you're going to talk about Stanley Kubrick a little bit.
Yep, I want to talk about Stanley Kubrick. Right. And we have some new stuff going on at the site that I'd like to talk about later as well.
So let's go through these calls, then we'll do the top 5. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Sarah. Hey, Tim. Hey, Scott.
Hello.
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 Hey, just a call back to Morton Downey Jr. Do you remember the album that he put out, Morton Downey Sings?
Yeah, I do. I never heard it, but I do know that he put out an album. I can even picture the album cover, but I don't think I ever heard it.
Yeah, I heard it, and believe me, it was not good. But he also, in the 50s, they were trying to pitch him as a singer, and he had actually kind of a hit with the song The Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Really?
Remember that? Yeah, if you search around on the net, you can actually find that. There's actually video of him looking like a Sinatra wannabe.
And I'm pretty sure that Morton Downey Jr. is also an uncredited producer on the song Wipeout by the Safaris.
I think you're correct.
Yeah, I don't even know why I know that, but I'm pretty sure that it's true. At least that's what I always heard. So I don't know if it's true or not. But yeah, I will say this about it is that Morton Downey Jr. Really was. He was an American original. He really was. There's no getting around that.
Hey, what you guys were talking about him being a villain? Didn't he play a villain in some superhero type movie there in the 90s or 80s?
He did.
I don't know. I don't know.
It was really bad, but I do recall him being in.
Well, now I'm gonna have to look. Hold on. We'll look it up right now. Hold on, IMDb.com. Now I'm gonna have to figure it out because it does seem obvious. Morton Downey Jr. does seem like the kind of guy who ought to have played a villain.
Actually, I don't think he was the villain. I think he was actually a reporter that was kind of, you know, unscrupulous kind of a guy as a reporter, I think, or something there. But anyway, I'll listen to you off the air here.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right, Morton Downey, was he in Predator 2?
He was in Predator 2.
Okay, he was in Diagnosis Murder, Counter-Strike, Body Chemistry 2, Revenge of the Nerds 3, Monsters, Legal Tender, Thanksgiving Day, Predator 2. Oh, Tales from the Crypt. That's what the guy's thinking of, though. He was in Tales from the Crypt, which somebody mentioned earlier. Meet Wally Sparks. Yeah!
How appropriate is that?
That's fantastic. Meet Wally Sparks. Maybe you can learn to play my upright organ. All right. Hi, Sarah. How are you doing today? You were so involved in the show just a few minutes ago.
I'm really glad that I didn't play the Madonna song because I forgot that she was trying to be all edgy and swear in the middle of that rap.
Oh, in the middle of the American Life
thing? Yep, so now I have a clean one.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's what I'm listening with one ear.
What was that one video she did where she's in the latex in the box?
Oh, Erotica.
Yeah.
No. Human Nature. Human Nature.
Was it Human Nature?
Yeah.
Right. That one. Oh, God,
I didn't know we couldn't talk about sex.
Yeah,
that one.
That's
my favorite video, too.
Erotica.
And that's when she's in all like the rubbery leather.
Yeah, and she had like the weird little corkscrew hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I knew. I fell in love with my wife when we watched that video. She goes, "This is the best video ever."
Yeah.
Like yeah.
No, yeah. That's the fantastic other thing about Madonna, is that Madonna. Not so much now, but at the time, Madonna was one of those women that other women found really hot. Even women who profess to be entirely straight, women found Madonna very, I don't say erotic, but, you know, they found they were really intimate. Madonna, I think, really resonated with a lot of women. Even well, you know, straight women, I think, even found Madonna really attractive.
Well, she resonated. She was like erotica.
And she's the total strong female, you know, just big brass ones and so forth. And that's why she could do that hanky panky song, because she was such a strong woman, like a woman who would just, it was like some wilting flower, could never have done that. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm adorable. How are you?
Listen, I wanted to weigh in on the older women having long hair.
Yes.
Excuse me, I'm going to cough. I was eating a cookie while I was waiting for
you. What kind of cookie was it?
Oh, it's a mother's tea cake. English tea cake cookie.
That's wonderful. Okay, you are also adorable. All right, so what is how can I help you today?
No, I just wanted to weigh in on the long hair. I'm 68, and my hair is past my shoulders, and I have a number of friends that have longer hair than I do.
Now, are you a hippie?
No.
I'm not trying to insult you. I'm just saying that it's an unusual hairstyle for older women to have, at least in my experience. So I thought maybe if you were sort of a free spirit, that might explain that.
No, I was raised in Catholic school.
I guess a hippie wouldn't be eating a tea cake, though.
No.
Probably not. Excellent.
Need a big piece of patchouli.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Are you spreading the word about this program to all of your friends?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you so much. You call us anytime.
Thank you, hon.
All right, there you go. Aww. Excellent.
She called you hon.
That was adorable. Eating a tea cake.
That's outstanding.
That she was starting to choke on.
it is tea time.
Seriously, that she was... choking. Okay. One more here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Hey. Did I hear a rumor that Pulp Fiction is going to be in the theater again?
Yes.
Is that what I heard?
One night only.
Yes, tonight at the Baghdad Theater at 11 o'clock.
Tonight, Baghdad, 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I am there. I am totally there. Thank you for letting me know that.
Thank you,
sir. This show rocks, and I let people know about it every day.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, bye now. All right, fantastic. No need to mention KUFO there. All right. Okay.
It's all us. We're doing it.
Well, hey, so we don't run out of time here, why don't you talk about the Kubrick thing, then we'll break, we'll come back, we'll do news and the top five with Tim Riley.
Okay.
So Kubrick retrospective, what's that about?
The entire month of August at the Northwest Film Center Witzel Auditorium. That's a mouthful.
Is that that place on 20?
No, it's over right by the Portland Art Museum.
I don't even know where that is.
Oh, yeah. It's right there in the park blocks right next to the...
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, they're all month long between August 2nd, which I believe was yesterday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Today's 3rd. 2nd through the 25th, they are just having a Stanley Kubrick marathon.
Cool.
They're showing all his great films, Paths of Glory, The Killing, Barry Lyndon, Spartacus, all the way up to Full Metal Jacket, Clockwork Orange, the whole shebang. And I think many people forget the vast... film catalog that Kubrick has done. What he's done.
I mean, are they showing,
amazing.
Like, because he did all the way to, like, he did Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Strangelove.
And I think Joni would disembowel me if I did not mention that he did Lolita as well.
Yes.
He did the original Lolita in the
60s. Fantastic. And for a film in the 60s.
Which everybody can hunt me down and burn me. I've never seen it.
You're kidding me.
No, I just never... I mean, it's not like I avoided it. I've only seen the Adrian Lyne version.
We've seen the Jeremy Irons.
All I know about Lolita is that I just know that iconic poster with her with the heart. Isn't that it? Where she has the heart sunglasses?
The
I've seen the Adrian Lyne one when that came out in like 96. I never saw the Kubrick version.
Oh,
the Kubrick
one is fantastic.
Like, Joni's a freak for that, but I've never seen it.
You know, it's Kubrick. I mean the way he comprises his shots and the way everything's so tight and so focused.
Because he had to be very... it must have been hard to make that film in the 60s, though.
Any of his films. I mean, look at Spartacus. I mean, that's huge. But he pulled it off. And I love Stanley Kubrick, and I don't care what people say. I think he is one of the best filmmakers ever. And I'm really excited that the Film Center is doing a whole Kubrick thing, because how great is it to get to go see films like Clockwork Orange or even Dr. Strangelove in the theater again?
Well, even the bad Kubrick films, and there are some, are great looking. Like, for me, and I know that I'm in the minority on this, I don't like The Shining. the movie, but it's a great looking film. Mm-hmm. I mean, The Shining as a film looks beautiful. I mean, it's so well done. It's so well shot. I don't find it. I find it kind of miscast and sort of scary, or sort of not scary. But I do think it's a beautiful looking film.
There is one scene in The Shining, and I've seen it a million times. There's one scene where I cannot watch it. I know the scene's coming up. I'll fast forward through it. It's the lady in the bathtub.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, gross.
Yeah,
something fierce.
Yeah.
Favorite Kubrick film, Rick?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, God, boy, I don't even know. Probably Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I mean, I love Full Metal Jacket, like all you guys do.
Oh, yeah.
Full Metal Jacket, the only thing that stops that from being my favorite Kubrick film is that most of the time, you just want to quit watching after the boot camp part,
yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Occasionally, I'll watch it all the way to the end, but it's sort of like Stripes. Once they're at a boot camp, the film's kind of done for me.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Once Private Pyle, why didn't get a boy? Bam! And I'm like, okay, movie done.
Yeah.
You know? They ought to make some sort of dude mix where it's like the first half of Stripes and the first half of Full Metal Jacket into one great film.
That's it.
So,
yeah, Strangelove is hands down my favorite film because it is so witty and so funny and so off-putting. You're laughing as the bomb is going off,
yeah,
because they're the song they're playing. Slim Pickens is fantastic, but I think the stand-up performance in Dr. Strangelove is George C. Scott.
Oh, it's just Peter Sellers is doing like 100 different characters in that movie. So
I know Dimitri.
All right,
funny.
Take a break. After this, we'll come back. Tim Riley, the bottom of the hour with news. Then we'll roll the top 560s. Slow dance songs. It's 503-733-2970.
Thank you, Sarah.
Boy,
it's a sexy song.
Boy, listen to how 90s that sounds. It sounds like a crisscross song. Boy, calling Jermaine Dupri. I haven't heard this forever.
But the versions of American Life that claim to be clean were not.
Not so much.
Not so much. That's a crappy song anyway. We don't need to play it.
It's just the rap. We should just play just the rap section before the show comes to an end. Oh, hello. Hi. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Back after this. Don't go anywhere.
Creepy.
503-733-2970. Who wants to hear a creepy email?
I do.
Sure. Please.
Hey, Rick. My grandma's got nice tea cakes, too. Says Michael. Coming up, the top 560 slow dance songs. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Stevie Wonder will go on his first U.S. tour of more than a decade, starting next month in San Diego. And Portland is one of the stops.
Woot.
I tried to find the exact date, and I went to Stevie Wonder's website, and it's just a white screen.
I could tell you that date, actually.
I actually got an email from, I think Kink. Nah, I say this, and maybe I'm jinxing myself. I think Kink is presenting that show.
I think it's the 25th at Edgefield. Lovely Troutdale.
Because I got a CBS email saying, if you would like to buy advance tickets for this through the Kink, blah, 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 blah. So I think the Kink is actually...
And then he's going to be in Woodinville, Washington, wherever that is.
Sorry. So, hey, when is his first tour in what?
In a decade, it says here.
Yeah. Stevie Wonder, I mean, he's another one of those guys that hadn't done a whole lot in recent years, but doesn't really need to because, you know, he's Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he really is kind of he's a living legend.
Then a drunk woman driver is wanted in connection with the death of two chemist women. Warrants are out for 38-year-old Teresa Nickleby. She was allegedly intoxicated at 3 o'clock when she was driving the wrong way down Highway 14 and hit another car, killed somebody. A woman in Mexico City kept the body of her dead husband by her bedside for a year until neighbors disturbed by the smoke called the police.
Sort of a gaseous pinata.
Police broke down the door and find the petrified body of her husband, Eduardo, on the floor of their bedroom. They're investigating whether or not her husband died of natural causes. He was in his 60s. He had mental problems.
On the floor? Doesn't sound like he was alone in that.
No.
I wish to be buried on the floor next to the bed.
Under a blanket.
Well, Baghdadians are starting to enjoy the taste of American products. The first thing Steve Yelder does when he gets his Iraqi money... This is a 17-year-old Iraqi high school student.
Named Steve?
Mm-hmm. Named Steve. He visits the Alamo.
I don't think he's a real Iraqi.
That's what it says here, or so we are led to believe. Steve, an Iraqi.
Not Steve, that's like a dear Ahmed advice call him. Steve, not his real name.
Well, the first thing he does is visit the Al Amir market and heads straight to the Pringles display. The taste is incredible, says Steve.
It begins.
I can't. Seriously. Welcome to the wonderful world of capitalism. Have a Pringle.
Steve, I'm surprised that these Pringles are whole. How do they get there in one piece?
Pringles
are the only thing we can manage to deliver to the Iraqis that aren't damaged.
But yeah, you can crawl across the street to Plaid Pantry and they're in a million pieces.
Pringles are amazing.
Steve will be fat, about 100 pounds overweight.
Yeah,
they're
bringing them freedom and obesity.
Steve also likes Kellogg's Fruit Loops and Kent cigarettes.
Well, who doesn't?
Gatorade is popular when temperatures break 120 degrees, which is every day.
Who needs water? Jesus.
Fruit Loops and Kensick.
That really is the American way. No point in having anything natural when you can have something that's filled with corn syrup.
It is not a big problem, said Steve, to find American goods everywhere.
I wonder if he just picked the name, like, to go with his brand new American indulgences.
That could be.
All right.
Are we still doing this?
You mean this job? Sadly, yes. We're here every day.
I forgot what I'm doing.
All right.
All you Angelinos will be curious to know. That Hal Fishman, who's anchored the news on KTLA for like 40 years, has been hospitalized with a serious infection. He hasn't been out the air since like 1965.
Well, is he going to be one of those guys that does the show from the hospital bed? Like,
probably.
That's like B. Mitchell Reed and those guys, like, live to you from the Cedars-Sinai intensive care, you know.
Well, one of the reporters named Stan has been with the station since 1947.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What could he possibly report at this point? I mean,
they send him out to cover things every night. He's like 80 or 90.
Reporting on the spread of his liver spots or something?
Mm-hmm. He was best known for the story about the little girl who fell into the well.
Oh, yeah.
So they kept him after that because how can you fire somebody who covered a story about a little girl
in the
well?
It'd be like following firing the whale explosion guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So we hope Hal Fisherman gets better.
All right.
Well, are we doing this now?
Let's roll the top five, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, here's your top five for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
4, 3, 2, 1. Fire!
La 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 la.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best day.
Apparently, tickets for Stevie Wonder go on sale tomorrow. By the way.
Counting is happiness.
Where is the Edgefield even at?
It is in Troutdale. We were there last weekend, actually.
Didn't it used to be a nursing home?
It's Wood Village. It did. It used to be a poorhouse in the early 20th century.
A what?
A poorhouse.
Oh, a poorhouse.
Yeah, and it's a creepy place.
Best little poorhouse in Edgefield. I was just a stupid joke. It was right there.
Funny.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's your...
It goes with our demographic as we're quite successful at delivering.
68-year-old demographic.
We appear to be number one in lowest common denominator humor demographics. Let's see, we're also very big in the obvious joke demographic, and also boobs. All right, here's your top five 60s slow dance songs from Tim Riley.
With honorable mention, going to Henry Mancini and the theme from A Summer Place.
Totally. I used to hear the song all the time, even though I grew up in the 80s and the 70s.
So this would go up to the top of the hour news time.
Hello.
Paul Harvey coming up next hour. Farm reports. And a look at your health. This is like how my mom would kill time until Marcus Welby, MD, came on or whatever.
I can just see this playing from a little stand up phonographs.
God, listening to this on one of those solid, no pun intended, one of those solid state radios that weighed like a million pounds.
Touch the top and you burn your hands because the tubes are too hot?
Yep, exactly. People have asked me what solid state radio means. People under the age of 30 have asked me what solid state radio means. And solid state was a type of electronics that was actually, now correct me if I'm wrong, were solid state electronics the kind that did not have tubes, right? Because they solid state meant that they were rugged or considered durable because they were made without tubes.
From RCA, the most trusted name in electronics.
And we had one. It was a solid state combination AM/FM and 8-track player, and it weighed a ton. And it got really hot, and it had a weird smell to it. But that's what my mommy listened to KONA on. And this song seemed to be on constantly. This, Roger Whittaker, and Anne Murray's A Little Good News seemed to be the three songs that were in heavy rotation.
So AM970 is not a series of tubes, is what you're saying.
Actually, Jeff McGinley, when he was here, had a picture of our, I think it was our backup generator. It really was a series of tubes.
Fantastic.
He actually photographed the tubes. All right. Counting down the top 560 slow dance songs.
At number five, it's Percy Sledge.
Oh,
and
come
when
on.
A man loves a woman.
This is still a great song.
Oh, yeah. And no amount of overplaying can change the fact that this is a great song. It's that organ, too. That's what makes it work there.
And that voice. Listen to that velvety smooth voice.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Who put the splits together?
I think Scotty did with input from Tim. Is that right?
Me and you.
Yeah, and I helped a little bit, too.
Well, the 60s is kind of tough to do because it's kind of a decade cut in two.
Yep. Well, that's sort of the pre-rock era and the rock era.
Depressing film. Andy Garcia.
I never saw this. Oh, and Meg Ryan.
Oh, and she's hiding the bottle of booze in the small cupboard.
Snuff it when you're done. It's horrible.
The 60s is also tricky, and in fact, the 50s even more so when it comes to creating a list like this, because, especially if you're doing any sort of chart-based list, because they were still, I think, well into the 60s, they were still segregating the charts. And they had the so-called race chart, or R&B chart, which was just Whitey's code for, you know, where he would put black artists, because they didn't want to put them on the same chart as the white artists. So there were these two, I mean, I suppose you can argue that this has never really gone away, but there were two very different worlds in terms of what songs were popular. Boy, what a great song. Counting down the top five 60s slow dance songs.
And we'd like everyone to know that the Hermiston watermelons are all gone. Remember they were giving them away free at Pioneer Courthouse Square today?
Yes.
They were gone in less than an hour. Watermelon-hungry Oregonians.
Is that some sort of social control experiment, I wonder?
It is.
People who have a plutonium deficiency.
They left with a glow in their eyes.
And on their skin. You know,
it's an annual Hermiston tradition. Come into the city and give away radioactive melons.
Hermiston days.
See our glow.
I'm going to Hermiston in 2 weeks, actually.
You'll love our new melanoma.
Bring a Geiger counter with
you. No, that was a dumb joke.
I should. Be testing like a bat, too.
Let me just say, by the way, as we continue, I thought this list would end up being kind of a buzzkill, but it's not. It's actually really sweet. This is a really sweet, charming list. Top 560 slow dance songs.
The music that makes you feel good. And number four, it's Procol Harum.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Shade of Pale.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is the other 60s.
This is great.
This is the white man's 60s.
Right here.
Paler shade of white, really, this band.
This is fantastic.
What does Procol Harum even mean?
I think it's something British.
Yeah. Because this was... Yeah, because these is a British group, right?
Yeah.
His lyrics mean nothing.
Well, the Brits...
Or did we skip the line Fandango?
The Brits showed the Americans how to do drugs.
I think it's Light Fandango.
Oh, Fandango? Yeah. I thought it was gibberish.
No, we skipped the Light Fandango.
For the longest time, I always thought this was Van Morrison.
And it actually is, as they note in the commitments, the melody is nicked from Marvin Gaye, who in turn nicked it from Bach.
Oh, yeah.
Great song. I mean, it's a real... This is a total baby boomer song. It really is like... As the, what do they say? Not just white, but boomer white. But, I mean, it's a great song. There's no getting around the fact. Many of these songs suffer what I call the big chill effect, though.
Yeah.
You know, which is where it's hard to view them apart from their place in the sort of kinkifying of the culture. All right, Countess.
I just recognize it's from an episode of The Wonder Years.
Really?
Well, mm-hmm.
You know.
Hey, that's great.
All right, Kenny, the top 560 slow dance songs.
And number three, The Drifters with Stand
oh,
By
come
Me.
Come on. Mm. What a great song.
This song still gives me the goosebumps.
Oh, I mean, it was a great song before the movie.
Yep.
But, of course, after the movie, it became even more iconic. Let me just say for the record. What a great song. Let me say for the record, I detest the John Lennon cover of this, which a lot of people really like, but this is such a beautiful song.
Didn't Cameo cover the song, too?
Like, Word Up Cameo?
Yeah.
Maybe.
It was terrible. I remember a horrible, horrible cover of this song.
Oh, I won't be afraid just as long as you stand by me. So, darling, darling.
I'm glad we ended the week with this list. This is a really great list. This is a really nice, charming, sweet list to end with.
It really ended with Scotty's list the other day.
We were going to end it with Cats in the Cradle.
Thanks for that, guys.
All right. Counting on the top 560 slow dance songs. Number two.
Number two, The Righteous Brothers with Unchained Melody.
Oh. Such an amazing song.
Wasn't this number one for like 1,000 weeks or something?
Mm-hmm.
This is...
Also from the movie Ghost.
I love this song. U2 does a great cover of this song, too.
I can see that.
This is so good, though.
Oh, listen to that. The Righteous Brothers, they actually had a lot of songs. Like Soul and Inspiration is another one of their songs. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But this is...
Blue-Eyed Soul.
Yep.
I love the build-up in the song.
They weren't really brothers, were they? Boy, can't you just see, like... You can totally just see a bunch of, like, freshly scrubbed, like, 60s kids in a gymnasium.
Yes. With their suits on.
All right. Counting down the top 560 slow dance songs.
And number one, The Association with Cherish.
This is... If you listen closely, you can hear the 60s becoming the 70s, actually, in the song. Like, at any moment, they could burst into Age of Aquarius, you know?
I'm just curious as to why this is number one as opposed to...
I disagree with that as well. Yeah, I disagree with this. Tim?
These are Scotty's opinions only.
Oh, wow. Scotty.
Now you blame Scotty.
Let's have him killed. All right.
I mean, this is an all right song, but...
This is wrong. The list was fine. It's an NFL
They're
part of the
They're all equally memorable songs. We can't say that.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, greatest newsman in all the world. Back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour all the way through Lycus. We will return to wrap it up after this. Flash Friday at 3, Donna Mike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. I don't even like this song.
Yeah, but this is when she was the hottest.
That's kind of why I played it, though. It is sort of definitive in a way.
Yeah.
Because without this, you wouldn't be able to have a million hack journalists calling her the material mom. All right. This email says, Rick, don't be a fool, Rick Emerson. If you kill Scotty J, he'll become stronger than you could possibly imagine. All right. Let's see. Scott Daly, FilmFeverRadio.com.
Yes, FilmFeverRadio.com version 2.0 unveiled tonight. Brand new website. Lots more interactive stuff going on. Best of section. As well as a brand new show with the guys from Cosmic Monkey Comics. So
Excellent. It's
a great, great show this week. Brand new website coming in about 3 hours.
And be sure to catch Miles Around with Dennis Pitchenbarger tomorrow, 9 to 11. Immediately preceded by Car and Driver Radio 6 to 9. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Lisa Goddard, Steve Kastenbaum, Ed McCarthy, and so forth. Rick Emerson Show produced today. Sarah, Tim, Scotty. I regret nothing. All right. Don't let the bad thing get
my mind. Just let rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain.